Pod. I'm Chris Hewitt and welcome to the latest in our series of spoiler specials. This one is dedicated to the biggest film of the year so far, and perhaps, when the dust has settled, the biggest film of the year, Zack Snyder's Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice. As ever, this is a spoiler special, so if you're one of the few people on this planet or the planet Krypton who hasn't yet seen the first on-screen meeting of The Dark Knight and The Man of Steel, then hightail it to your nearest cinema and come back only when you've seen it, for we're about to get all spoilerific. We'll be talking third act revelations, stuff that possibly sets up the Justice League movies and beyond, and much, much more. But before we get into all of that, we have some questions about the film, obviously, and its major plot revelations, and who better to answer those than the producers of Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice, Chuck Roven and Deborah Snyder, and then the director himself, Zack Snyder. Now, I didn't have long with them, certainly not, if you're a fan of the spoiler specials, Chris McQuarrie long, so we didn't tackle everything, but I hope you enjoy the answers they gave. We're delighted to be joined to the Empire podcast by Zack Snyder. How are you, sir?
I'm great. It's great to be here.
It's well, great to have you here. And we can talk about stuff now, which is good because this is coming out after the film, film opens. So I think I want to talk about the big death that everyone's going to be talking about. Jimmy Olsen.
The death of innocence?
the death of Jimmy Olsen.
Yeah.
Right off the bat. Sort of
yeah,
speak.
Had to do it.
Yeah.
It's funny because in the DVD, you'll see he actually calls himself by name.
Okay.
Right out.
Oh,
he
interesting.
Says, I'm Jimmy Olsen, photographer, obviously.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a scene that I cut out of the movie that has that section in it.
But okay.
For time, it was too long of a story to tell. But I think he's symbolic of the sort of, it was funny because, you know, that was one of those things I wanted to do right from the beginning. I wanted to do this death of Jimmy Olsen as a way of sort of getting into the preparing yourself for the world that you were going to enter.
Nothing, everything you know is wrong. All that,
yes.
yeah, usual stuff. Okay, fantastic. It's going to come as a bit of a shock, but we'll build up some other stuff as well. Because what I thought was fascinating about the film was that it begins and ends with a funeral that has a profound effect on Bruce Wayne.
Right.
Clearly, that wasn't an accident.
No. 100% not an accident. It was meant as a bookends to the movie of this sort of cyclical nature. And also I think that it speaks to sort of the mythological Bruce Wayne, who's been surrounded by death like his whole life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, having to navigate those waters and have those things make him kind of who he is.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it would be interesting to... though have this last death be a thing that's propelling him toward sort of a cathartic, if you will, or a way to, he sees a way out of the darkness through this last thing.
Because I find the Bruce that is portrayed in this movie for the first, until he decides, you know, he realizes Superman is on the side of angels after all. I find Bruce in this movie to be fascinating because you have in a way recalibrated him as not an out-and-out bad guy, but certainly he has villainous potential.
Yeah, I think that the idea is that he, in pursuit of, you know, the whole conversation is between revenge and justice. You know, what is the difference? You know, and that there is a difference.
Mm.
And I think he's lost sight of that a teeny bit. You know, he's not 100%. He's justice at all costs, or at any cost.
Yeah.
He hasn't, his code is the code of sort of, he's a fanatic in some ways in regard to righting wrongs that he perceives, you know.
Absolutely. It's very interesting in the big confrontation between the two of them that Bruce is head up to an extent that he won't even brook a conversation with Superman, who basically says, let's talk about this, and then he goes straight into trying to wipe him out.
Yeah, and I think that Bruce also calculates that Superman's morality is basically his weakness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he knows that, because in my mind, the mech suit is really just there to preserve him long enough for him to, it's not doing anything. It's like a bear suit, right? Like it's just keeping him alive. We were joking that that's probably why it was designed. Originally, it was designed because a bear got out of the Gotham Zoo and he had to like track it down. So he made that suit so he wouldn't be mauled to death. But so you can imagine like the idea to me of the suit is really, you know, again, to like keep him alive long enough
yes.
for Superman to kind of let his guard down for mm. ever, for the smallest, like, so he could actually just get the shot off.
Absolutely. You I think I timed it. I've seen the film twice now, and I timed it the second time around. The big confrontation comes about 90, 95 minutes in, maybe even later than that. So you make people wait for the battle royale,
right,
to speak. Was that always the intention from the start, or did you have earlier confrontations?
Yeah, no. I mean, I have that one, the teaser confrontation.
Do you bleed?
After the Batmobile, yes, do yeah. you bleed? You will. And I really, and we designed that. And then, of course, they have the Lex's party.
Yes.
And so you have these kind of, I kind of came to the conclusion also that they couldn't really talk in their suits with any credibility. You know what I mean?
Okay.
We had to get them back in their civvies.
So you couldn't have that version of the heat coffee
you
shop.
You can't in their suits. By the way, the honest truth is we talked all about, like, we need the heat scene. Like, that was like my mantra. I kept saying, we need the heat scene. We need the heat scene.
Yeah.
But like when they're in their suits, it was impossible. We tried it. And
okay.
It's just one of those things that you know, if there are like more than four or five lines and you start to notice, like, wait, these are two guys dressed up. One guy's dressed up like a bat and the other one has a big red S on his chest. And they're being super serious about how mad they are at each other. And it just, you can, you know, it's just, it's a dangerous thing, you know, because it just gets, yeah.
It can after a while, I imagine. Yeah,
yeah.
Absolutely. But in terms of those confrontations, in terms of setting up Bruce and Clark, it leads to an interesting question about secret identities in this movie. I mean,
yeah.
how much?
Yeah,
do they
I mean,
know about
I,
each other?
I tried to kind of like my philosophical approach to secret identities was that they, such a convention, right? Mm. And I felt like in the modern world, in our modern aesthetic, their secret identities are dodgy at best, right? That the notion that they are anonymous
yeah.
because they wear a mask
yeah.
is kind of slightly passe in, you know, its practical application. And so by putting too much emphasis on the figuring out of who they are by someone like Lex Luthor, for instance, mm-hmm. I think sort of undercuts any credibility that he might have to then do something more sophisticated, like, you know, create a life form or whatever it is. You know what I'm saying? I feel like the figuring out that Superman is Clark Kent is Superman it should be a thing that would be fairly easy for Lex Luthor.
Yeah, it's the old joke, isn't it? I mean, you know,
it is the old joke.
How good is Lois Lane,
it's
really?
It's kind of come home to roost, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But in the movie itself, is Bruce aware that Clark and Superman are one and the same? Because obviously...
I don't think... He hasn't yet.
He hasn't figured that
I don't
out
think he
until
has
the very end, obviously.
Yeah, he hasn't yet.
Okay.
Probably because he doesn't care to.
Okay.
I think he's more... His obsession is with the... Because unlike Lex, he probably wouldn't leverage Superman's loved ones mm-hmm. against him.
Mm.
You know, just because he doesn't, that's not in his way of thinking.
Absolutely. Which, of course, comes into play, that lack of awareness, I guess, from Bruce's part, about Clark and about Superman comes into play at the end of the fight, the big fight, the revelation that both their mothers have the same first name,
exactly.
It's the thing that snaps him out of his insanity, if you will.
Yeah, out of his fever.
Yeah.
His fervor to kill.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a really... And, you know, and hence why I wanted to have the death of the Clarks. The death of the Waynes at the beginning of the movie.
Okay. Why was that?
Just so I could plant the Martha reference in there yeah. and sort of get a chance to see Martha alive. Mm-hmm. For the briefest time, so mm-hmm. that you could connect with her on mm. some level.
It's also interesting when Bruce has that dream sequence. The first one where the man bat.
Yeah.
It's Martha's grave.
He's obsessing
over it as well.
Yeah. We were going to have like that be Martha, but then I thought that was too much.
Okay. At what point did you...
I'm just kidding.
that would have been interesting.
Yeah, scary.
At what point did you realize... I mean, obviously, it's canonical that they both have mothers called Martha, but at what point did you realize? Were you looking for something that would turn Bruce around?
100%. We were looking for some kind of connection, and that was seemed like an obvious way to humanize them when we talked about the fact that they both have the mothers both have the same first name. And the irony is for Bruce in weakening Superman so far as to make him a man, mm-hmm. it makes the killing of a god impossible mm-hmm. because he's just a man
yeah.
whose mother has the same name as he does.
Yeah.
So like all of his fervor and all of his heat has come off in the face of that, you know? Mm,
absolutely. And that kind of leads us on to one of the big decisions that you made. And I was speaking to Deborah and Chuck earlier on, and they said you made the decision to succeed where Lex Luthor failed, frankly, in killing
right.
Superman.
Right, right.
Quite early on in the process.
Yeah, it was pretty almost right away. And I'll tell you why. It was when we decided to go toward the Justice League. When we knew we were going to do a Justice League movie at the end of this, mm-hmm. which was pretty early on.
Yeah,
I said we have to kill Superman because Bruce Wayne has to be the one that puts the Justice League together.
Okay.
And with Superman around, it's going to be difficult. And there's going to be the sort of urgency to form the Justice League is going to be difficult to like muster with Superman flying around, even if he opposes them or whatever. Mm. I just felt like it would be a cleaner, interesting world to have Bruce in his panic have to kind of figure out how to put this team together.
There's a little hint at the end that he might not be entirely dead, but...
Yeah, I mean, Kryptonian cells probably would not be decaying. Just saying.
Totally, 100% completely. you mentioned the metahumans. The decision to introduce obviously Wonder Woman is a big chunk of the movie herself, but the other metahumans, the Flash and Cyborg and Aquaman, in that very, very brief montage. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I felt like it was important to see them. And then I realized that the only way we could see them is through a perspective of, or in the same way that Lex could see them or that mm. someone else would see them. You can't really cut to them out in the world because what we're supposed to be observing is the information that they're alive mm. or that they exist. And so we thought sort of hard, long and hard about what kind of little snippets of reality might exist where they might have brushed with our world in a way maybe they didn't want to. Mm-hmm. And so that was kind of where that decision came from. And I also felt like it allowed me to tease it in like, you know, a sort of, you know, Loch Ness Monster kind of a Bigfoot-y kind of a way.
Intriguing. And of course, Lex is the one who's investigating them. And the folders have the logos for each hero on them, which means that Lex is effectively the creator of.
I kind of like that. I mean, I know that's sacrilege, but I kind of love it because like when you think about it, I like thinking about it in a sort of like really sort of straightforward way that you can imagine sort of as a naming convention. Wonder Woman really would not have gotten her name from anyone other than someone who was trying to file her somewhere, right?
Yeah,
and Flash feels like the same thing, and Aquaman certainly feels like a pretty straightforward approach to that. And Cyborg also, I mean, when you think about their actual names, though iconographic,
yeah,
kind of the first thing you'd think of.
Yes.
You know, it's not
yes.
like it's not like they went down a giant rabbit hole with like the naming conventions.
Precisely. What's your name? I'm Wonder Woman. That's my name.
That's
that
my name.
Myself.
I name myself that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So there you go. Yeah. I've got a massive ego. And just very, very, very quickly, talking about setting stuff up for Justice League. Would you start filming in when? How long?
Yeah, it's April 11th. So
wow.
About 2.5 weeks.
Okay. Wow. Is the extended dream sequence or glimpse of the future.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Can you talk about that?
What can you say about that?
What can you say about that?
What can I say?
There's a giant logo on the ground.
What will you say? What can I say? Well, I mean, let's just say this. I think it's okay to look at the extended dream sequence as a impressionistic view of a possible future, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's not hard to, I mean, that's in the sequence, right? Like, I'm not spoiling anything or making up anything that you didn't see. And so the connection with Flash is the Flash part of that sequence.
Mm-hmm.
You can speculate if whether or not Flash is coming. Sorry, I'm a little tired.
That's a different film.
That's a different one. Equally as good though. But whether he's coming from that reality or another one, but it's that's the fun stuff to try and figure out exactly what Flash is saying to Bruce and what he means, because it's all we know. So it's not, we're not making it up. I mean, we are making it up, but we're not making it up. No, that's what I meant.
Absolutely.
We are not making it up.
Indeed. and the last thing is, so can you say anything about Darkseid?
I don't know. What is his symbol again? It's something like a Z, but a Greek Z or something. I don't know. I don't know. Does that appear in the movie? I don't think so. Oh, maybe a little bit.
Giant.
Oh, that giant impression in the ground. That's right. I mean, maybe he exists out in the universe somewhere.
Yeah,
maybe. Looking for something.
Maybe a bell has been rung.
Something that's against life. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. Intriguing. Zach, I could talk to you all day about this movie, but thank you so much for
Oh, it's my pleasure. It's
Thank
fun.
You. Take care.
Super fun. Cheers.
Thank you. Now, delighted to be joined on the Empire Podcast by Deborah Snyder and Chuck Roven, producers of Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice. Welcome.
Hello.
How are you?
Hi there.
Good to be here.
Are you relieved to be at the end of this long process?
I think it's still really exciting, and you make movies for people to see them, and now after working on this one for, over 3 years, finally people are going to get to see it.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's start at the beginning. Back right at the beginning when the movie was announced, how far along the road of a Man of Steel sequel were you before the idea of Batman came into it?
I think we had just released Man of Steel when we went to Comic-Con and announced that we were going to be doing another film, a follow-up.
Yeah.
Not exactly a sequel. And then it was going to be called Batman versus Superman.
I think it was during post, though. You know, we started the studio, kept saying, okay, what's next? Are you guys going to do a sequel? Or are you going to do something else with this character? What do you want to do? And then we were thinking about, okay, well, what villains are out there? And then Zach said, listen, I think what I would really like to do is, what if we put Batman and Superman in the same movie?
Mm.
If we collide the universes, and what happened, you know, if they fought?
Yeah.
I mean, it's very public knowledge that he's a big fan of Frank Miller's and his graphic novels, so I think that was an inspiration.
Absolutely.
Although the story is very different. But.
Yeah,
and actually, you know, Batman meeting Superman is part of the canon, and them not getting along is also part of the canon.
Yeah.
So, and there was at one time a Batman versus Superman script developed at Warner Brothers that never got made.
Did that have any impact on what you guys were doing? Did you look at previous iterations?
We never even read it.
Okay, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Just in case. Well, hang on.
Warner's, I'm sure, legal people, you know, go, that's their job. But we were telling our own unique story. And I think it started with the idea, once you started talking about Batman and Superman, it's like, okay, well, what's their motivation? And what... Mm. Why are they going to fight? And then it's like, and who's going to win? That's kind of the big question.
And it's interesting in the movie that, not to huge things at the end, but let's just jump to the idea of, it would have been so easy to finish this movie on a shot of the Justice League assembled and ready to fight in the movie that you're about to start shooting now in London. How did discussions ever go that way, and how difficult was it to avoid that?
No, I don't think the discussions ever really went that way. I think that we wanted to, you know, we did have a discussion after we settled on Batman versus Superman. And then this also came from Zach, his feeling about, gee, you know, what we've never done is we've never seen Wonder Woman on film. And, and that is the Trinity. And that would be good. And really, you know, and then we just said maybe we should just hint about some others. I don't think we ever really talked about going right from Man of Steel to Justice League.
Okay, interesting. Because obviously there's the montage in towards the end of the film where we see hints and glimpses of the people you've already cast. So Ezra Miller.
The Metahumans.
Montage, yeah, absolutely. Can you talk about the decision to introduce characters like Flash and Cyborg and Aquaman in that montage?
Well, I think it felt very organic to the story because Lex was doing investigating. And if he's investigating and knows things about Wonder Woman, well, I would assume he knows things about other metahumans. So it kind of just all, I think, you know, fit in very organically. You know, we didn't want to do too much with them because we still had a story to service and, you know, the story that we were telling. But they seemed to just fit in, I think, very organically.
Was Lex always the way into the metahumans? Or was Bruce ever a way in at some point?
Well, Bruce investigating Lex was always the way in. From every incarnation and every draft, he was always suspicious of Superman. The reasons for it changed a little bit, I think, over the course of the development of the screenplays. But he, you know, just by the nature of who Bruce Wayne is, he's going to be somebody who's suspicious. That's what he is, right?
Absolutely. Can you talk about spacing out the confrontations between the three of them as well? It's very, very clearly delineated in the film. The first meeting between them is Clark and Bruce. Then we have normal suits, and then we have the battle royale. Was that always the idea, to space those confrontations out between throughout the movie?
I think when you're developing the script, you want to make sure that all your action isn't lumped at the end of the movie or lumped in. So you want to kind of space it out. That's your, you have a lot of character and story, and you know, you want to give the action fan some action along the way as well.
Yeah.
So I mean, we were conscious in that, so it just didn't feel like unbalanced. But that was really the only, I think, reason. And it was fun for them to have the confrontation as their alter egos.
Yes.
You know, I think that that was something that was very interesting to all of us as we were developing the script. And that's actually one of my favorite scenes in the movie.
Yeah,
because you realize that, you know, Jesse, Lex, is the puppet master. And he's brought them all together, and he knows, he's in the know, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. So, so just to clarify, at that point, does Lex know that Clark is Superman?
At the party at his house.
Absolutely.
He does know. Okay.
Absolutely.
That's interesting.
Absolutely.
When he shakes his hand, he says, "Wow, you have a great group," and he hits him, he says, "Don't get into a fight with this guy." One of my favorite moments in the film, too.
So Lex has been doing his own detective work as well. Presumably.
Absolutely. That's why he has all the meta-human files. So he's been doing a lot of research on all of them. There's files on all of them, and maybe there's files on people that we don't even know yet.
Oh, interesting. So there's a file on Bruce, presumably. He knows that Bruce is Batman, or, you know, or does he not have an inkling at that point?
I think at the party he knows who Bruce is and who, you know, he sends him that invitation because he wants this confrontation to come to a head.
Okay.
You know, I think he feels that, like, Superman diminishes, you know, everything, the best that we have to offer, that humanity has to offer, will still pale in comparison to Superman, to this God on Earth.
Mm-hmm. And I think that once you realize that Lex set up Superman with the fight in the desert by getting Lois to do the interview with that leader.
Yes.
Then you have to assume that everything that he's done, he's done with the foreknowledge of who these players are.
Okay, yes.
That's what makes him the ultimate puppet master.
But at the same time, does Lex go out of control? Because it seems to me that he creates Doomsday, both as a fail-safe measure in case Batman doesn't succeed, but also, as a Doomsday device. Does he think he can control Doomsday? Which he's quickly disabused of that notion.
I think that he does go out of control. I think that he spins out of control at the end. And particularly, look at what he's like at the end of the movie when the Batman has visited him, and he talks about the bell's already been rung, and you know he's already anyway a bit out there as he goes along.
Yeah,
out there at the party when he gets he gets a little bit over angst about the speech that he's making.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's just a brilliant guy who gets more and more unhinged as the film goes on.
Indeed. But does he have a get out of jail free card with regards to Doomsday? Or he hasn't really thought that through in a way. He's unleashed his beast upon the world with no real way of stopping it should he get out of hand.
I don't know. I mean, there might be. I mean, listen, I don't want to be too spoilery, but, you know, he's been communing with the ship, so we don't know what he knows or you know, who he's been communicating with.
Yeah, he has a knowledge of 100 different universes, 100 different planets.
100,000.
100,000 planets, yeah, absolutely.
And the other thing is, don't forget, I think that it wouldn't be so outrageous to think that since, well, part of Doomsday is made from the remains of General Zod, which we see, there's also part of Doomsday that's coming from Lex's blood.
Yeah.
And I think the fact that Doomsday is partly Lex's blood makes him think that there's going to be some connection there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Rightly or wrongly.
Absolutely. It's the old Frankenstein's monster turning on his creation.
Exactly.
Which
it's
is
his Frankenstein.
Indeed, indeed. Let's talk, if we can, about where you guys have succeeded, where Lex Luthor failed, where Doomsday failed. And you kill Superman, which is a lovely mirroring of the way that Man of Steel begins with his with the literal birth. This movie ends with his death. Was that always a plan going into this film that you would?
Yes, it was always a plan because there needed to be something that allows Bruce to have faith in humanity again, and the fact that that comes from an alien, that the sacrifice that he makes for his adopted planet, that he can make such a sacrifice, I think really just hits home for Bruce. And it was, you know, I think that that was, not too many things could do that. It had to be something very powerful and very strong. Mm-hmm. So that was always the original intention. You know, I think it was a little bit of nervousness when Zach kind of pitched it to us, and then we went to the studio and they were like, okay, so you want to, I can't even say it because it's been a secret for so long.
So
you can say it with me, it's fine.
I think the other thing is we wanted to create at the end of this film an undeniable reason for Bruce to go out and look for these other metahumans.
Yes.
If you've got Superman around,
it's hard to do that, right?
It's hard to say, well, we got Superman around. Why do we
don't need
anybody
guys.
Else?
Yeah, it's fine.
Okay. And
it's
now,
fine.
And now you don't just have Superman around, right? You got Wonder Woman around too.
Yeah, yeah.
So pretty much the three of them should be able to take care of just about anything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But with Superman gone, and with the possibility of something else out there. Because the bell's been rung.
The bell has been rung, yeah.
Right? Then, now there's a reason, an undeniable reason. So to take what Debbie was saying, which is this sort of rebirth of Batman, right?
Mm-hmm.
Feeling again that mankind, man can be good.
Mm-hmm.
And this reason that maybe there's something out there and our Superman is gone. I need these other metahumans to help fight whatever may be coming.
Absolutely. I've got to let you go in a second, but I just want to talk about the notion that the bell has been rung, as Lex says, as you've mentioned yourself a couple of times. And we have that extended dream sequence about halfway through the film where Bruce...
You recognize that.
I do recognize that. You say dream sequence, but you could say message beamed from the future. How would you describe what happens and what Bruce's vision of the future?
I don't know. I think that's up for you to decide. Is it foreshadowing something? Is there something that he senses? I don't know. Is there something in the sand? I don't know. Maybe.
Is there a massive symbol?
Do you know what that symbol is?
I think that, like any good dream sequence, it's subject to a lot of different debate and interpretation, and rightly so.
And that might be a spoiler for a different movie to talk about.
Precisely, because we haven't even started shooting Justice League yet. You're one Superman down, by the way. I presume that Henry will be around at some point. But that dream sequence is fascinating, as well as the appearance of what appears to be the Flash at some point. I know you don't want to say too much about what he says, but what his message, his warning to Bruce, does seem to reinforce Bruce's notions about Superman. Unless, of course, he's not talking about Superman.
Like I said, it's a dream sequence. And
but is that a dream? Is the Flash a dream sequence?
Well, he seems to wake up from that, too.
Yeah. I don't know. It's a little debatable, I think, Chuck.
And one last thing. The decision to introduce a Batman who has been going for 20 years and has clearly had a lot of history, as we see with the Robin costume and the fact that Wayne Manor seems to have been graffitied quite heavily by the Joker. Can you talk about that decision and to have Batman a Batman who's been active for 20 years rather than a Batman who's perhaps been incited by or been instigated by the events of Metropolis?
It's a great juxtaposition with our Superman, who's just became this hero, mm-hmm. and who's figuring out how he belongs and where he belongs, to have this Batman who has been doing this for 20 years. And, you know, he says, I think at one point to Alfred, you know, it's like criminals are like weeds, Alfred. You pick one, another one grows in its place. So he's coming at it from a really disillusioned point of view. And I think that that's just really interesting dichotomy between the two of them.
Well, he also calls himself a criminal. He says, we're criminals. Not,
we've always been criminals. Yeah.
Always criminals.
We wanted a character who... Superman, as Debbie says, is right at the beginning of his... He's just, you know, come out and he's doing all these altruistic deeds and stuff like that. And so the juxtaposition of him against a guy who's really burnt out, and as a result of that burnout, he's maybe even gone over the edge. Mm. You know, he might be being just a little bit too aggressive in his tactics. The other thing we wanted to make sure that we did was we wanted a Batman that people would not... say, oh, is this a continuation of Christian Bale? We wanted to make sure it was very clear that this Batman was different than any Batman we've ever seen.
Absolutely. And that you did. Chuck, Debbie, thank you so much indeed. Thank you.
thank you. This has been fun.
It's been great. Okay, let's get into the film itself now. And to do so, I'm joined by three Empire colleagues. First up is the man who wrote Empire's 3-star review of the movie, Nick Dissemblian. How are you?
Hey, Chris. Very good, thank you. I brought along a few mugs of Granny's peach tea. Do you want some? Drink it.
Mmm, looks so good. Looks like own brand apple juice. So good.
After you drink that, I'm going to force you to eat a cherry Jolly Rancher.
Just a typical Wednesday for me and Nick, really. Well, okay, so you've seen the film twice.
Yes, I saw it. We saw it at a very shushy screening at Warner Brothers, where there weren't very many of us, and then I went again to see it at Westfield Shopping Centre in Stratford, and there was a kind of a packed out audience, although quite a few people left before the end.
Why? When? At what point did they leave?
They left about 5 minutes before the end. People just started leaving.
Maybe they'd seen it already?
Maybe. Maybe they just don't like funerals.
Next up, joining us in the podcast is Emma Thrower, a lady. Hello, Emma. How are you?
I'm not a lady, Chris. I'm a journalist.
Yes. Do you like that? That seamless setup?
That was seamless.
I set him up, you knock him down.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. You've seen the film once?
I've only seen it once. Yeah, okay. I would have very much liked to have seen it again.
Where do you stand on the film?
I stand on the fence. No, I stand very much with Nick's 3-star rating, but slightly... more towards the 2.5.
I was sort of around there. I really toggled back and forth between 2 and 3. And 2 felt a little bit mean. I mean, there was a lot about the film. We'll get into it, but there's a lot I like.
Yeah. Same.
But 3 felt too generous, 2 felt too mean. So it was a tough one, actually. To settle on.
And last but not least, a Kryptonian abomination that can only be described as Johnny Pyle. How are you?
I'm very well, mate. How are you?
I'm grand. You've seen the film as well, which is good for a spoiler special.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Where do you stand? Are you on the positive end of the spectrum? Or are you on the negative end of the spectrum? Where are you?
I mean, I think I'm with Nick. I think there are good bits. I think there are bad bits. I think there are nice moments, but it doesn't all hang together very well.
Mm. It's interesting, though, before we get in, because just saying one thing before we get into the film properly. We asked for your questions to tackle and discuss on the podcast. There's little prompts for where we might want to go with the discussion, and we've had a response to this film like we've had nothing else. Not Star Wars, not Avengers, not Hobbit, nothing else on any of the spoiler specials. We had over 100 questions from people. A lot of them were negative, and a lot of them were, you know, covering some of the same ground, but it's interesting to me how much this movie seems to be talked about at the moment.
Yeah.
There's a lot to chew on, and not just cherry Jolly Ranchers. There's so much going on. It feels like 4 films.
It does.
Going on.
But what I wanted to talk to you guys about before we get into stuff is just the reaction to the film in general. Because, Johnny, you're quite positive on it. Emma, you're kind of 2-3. Nick, you probably now haven't seen it twice. You're probably 2-3 as well. Mm-hmm. And it's in that region, I guess. And I'm kind of in that. There's a lot of good stuff about the film as well, but I'm a little bit more negative than you guys, having seen it now 3 times. The flaws become more apparent, I think, as you rewatch the film. But this film's been given a kicking. Mm-hmm. I mean, just a round, solid, absolute kicking on Rotten Tomatoes. I think it's 31% last time I checked.
Yeah.
And people are calling it a disaster, the worst superhero film of the modern era, the worst superhero film since Batman and Robin, certainly. In my opinion, it's not even the worst one of the last 12 months.
No.
Fantastic Four came out in August, which people seem to have forgotten.
Age of Ultron.
In fairness.
Oh,
Johnny,
careful.
Come on now. Come on.
I have a theory. I have a theory about the negative backlash, and I think it's to do with the fact that, you know, superheroes are sort of supposed to be aspirational. They're supposed to be characters that kids can watch and sort of go, I want to be like that. Mm. And I think the main issue with the film is that Batman and Superman are kind of both just in a very dark place in this film.
They're
kind of joyless, and they're not particularly heroic at any point. And so I think it's that people were kind of reacting to.
Yeah.
Even, you know, Green Lantern and Fantastic Four, films which are definitely worse than this, at least the heroes are kind of, you know, have some kind of moral compass.
Yeah.
But I don't think people have as much of an affinity with those characters as they do with these two. These two are put on such a huge pedestal, aren't they?
That's true.
And I just think the reaction has been nuts. As you said, like, our social media has just been, like, crazy. Like, I can't even fathom, like, yeah. I didn't expect it to kick off quite like that.
It obviously has its defenders as well. A lot of people who go in and go, oh, it's amazing. The same people who maybe have accused us of having made our minds up before we went in, mm-hmm. having similarly perhaps maybe made their minds up going in and they were going to love it. But, personally, of the people I know, of my friends, and I went to it with my wife last week when I saw it for the third time, and I'm not getting the sense that the people I know in the industry and outside the industry don't seem to really like it that much. And there's an interesting group of high-profile people. Mark Miller, for example, was quite down on it on Twitter recently. And obviously, there's a man who knows Batman and Superman inside out. It's interesting to me, this reaction to this film, which has story problems, as we will discuss over the next hour or so, but it looks great, has good performances largely across the board. I know, Nick, you're not a fan of Jesse Eisenberg's performance in this movie, but I think Ben Affleck has come out of it very, very well. Mm-hmm. And it's impossible not to hear the Wonder Woman theme and go nuts.
In your sleep.
Johnny's just rolled his eyes at that.
It's so good.
Not a fan, Johnny?
It just took me out of the movie completely. When we listen to the soundtrack in the office, which we do, over and over. That's the bit you engage with, but when you're in the film, because the rest of the soundtrack isn't like that, you're suddenly like, what the hell is going
on? My favourite
here?
Track on the soundtrack is definitely track 12, Superman Boots Up Dropbox. It's a great, great cue. I like that theme. It reminds me of the Doof Warrior.
Yeah.
That's why I thought it was Junkie XL who did it, but apparently it's Hans Zimmer.
Mm. Oh, it is Hans Zimmer.
I mean, he's on it, obviously, but okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, I really
and it's electric
like
cello,
too.
Not guitar, cello.
Obviously.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like the score as well. I'm one of the people who's been playing it quite a lot in the office. And there's a lot of bombastic droniness to the soundtrack. It's a little bit generic at times. But I like the Wonder Woman theme, and I like the Batman theme, the new Batman theme, which has elements, I think, of the Danny Elfman tune. If you listen to it a little bit, especially towards the end, when it comes back in, towards the end, there's something there.
I mean, you obviously get Zimmer's theme coming through every now and again, which I know you're a massive fan of.
Going for gold!
That one. And actually, the opening, another Wayne Parent death scene, but that's actually really, really beautiful, that intro.
Yeah, I really like the first 15 minutes of the film. First 10, 15 minutes. I like all the stuff with the material, even though it is another origin, which we don't need to see at all. And it might have been more interesting opening with something else. I don't know what, but...
I think it's an interesting point. Well, we will get into questions in a second, but I think it's an interesting point about the beginning of the film. First 10, 15 minutes, I thought, okay, this is going to be good.
Yeah.
We're in safe hands. There was an element for me of, to paraphrase wildly Jeff Goldblum in Jurassic Park, you do eventually plan to have Superman in your Superman movie, because he's just not in the first 10 minutes at all. And it's interesting, I think, in terms of the representation of the character and how some people feel that Zack Snyder either doesn't understand the character or actually actively dislikes Superman. The first time we see him is clearly as an entity to be feared when we see him from Batman's point of view, Bruce Wayne's point of view, rather, in Metropolis. But I like the beginning. I like what Zack Snyder is going for visually in this movie. With the bookends, you could talk about, do we need to see the Waynes killed again on screen for, what's it now, the 87th time, something like that?
I think it is.
Something like that. Yeah. Different people, have, obviously, this time, Lauren Cohen and Jeffrey Dean Morgan, once again being killed off in a Zack Snyder movie. Bless in the them. Opening in the opening minutes. What's he done to Zack Snyder? But there's a certain symmetry of the fact that the movie begins and ends with a funeral, two-coffin funeral that has a profound impact on Bruce Wayne. One sets him on this very, very dark path, and the other one, Superman's funeral, sets him on a lighter path. He's still obviously Batman, he's still obviously crusading for revenge, and he'll still, you know, throw his little batarangs at people in Gotham City from time to time, but, you know, he now wants to form the what will be called the Justice League. Yeah. So that's interesting.
He'll put away his branding iron. That's yes. done.
How does he heat that up? Does he have like a sort of cigarette lighter thing from a car that he has to plug it into?
He just pulls it out.
No, it's been a little bit controversial, the origin thing, because it's Bruce's dad throws the first punch, which I think has got a lot of people riled up.
What's wrong with that?
Because basically he gets them shot. They're not like innocent victims. He starts the fight with a guy with a gun. So it's kind of... It's
I mean, I think pulling a gun is starting a fight.
Yeah. But I think if he hadn't thrown a punch... I'm just relaying what is annoying people on the internet.
Right, okay. I think...
It doesn't bother me so much.
When it started, I was like, we have seen this. But then it was shot so beautifully, because that Zack Snyder can shoot a slow-mo scene.
Yeah,
he really can. And so I was very happy to see it again.
Yeah.
When he starts to be lifted up in that bat lift. Do you know the one I mean? When the bats start flying and he starts to magically fly. Yeah. I was like, not sure I'm enjoying this. And then, thank God it was a dream sequence.
One of many.
Yeah.
One of many. I have issues. I mean, probably if you were to... this is one of those things about these things. You have to talk about the film that's in front of you. But yeah, they probably could have started just, I think, with the Bruce Wayne driving through Metropolis sequence, and that would have felt new and fresh and different to me. But I know what he was going for with the two funerals thing, and that's fine. And also I think the murder of the Waynes kind of hints at the darkness and the brutality that this film is going to showcase, because, you know, let's be frank, everyone who's listening to this has seen the movie. This is a movie that ends where you can actually see Superman's exposed ribcage through a gaping hole in his chest. And it begins with Martha Wayne, from my reading of the film certainly, being shot in the head at point-blank range by the mugger, you know, if it is Joe Chill in this version, who knows. But certainly that's interesting. That says to me this is not going to be, you know, if you've taken a 6- and 7-year-old to this movie... there were a lot of kids in the screen I went to with my wife.
Why would kids want to go to a Batman?
Seemed really distressed. Besides, that's the thing. They, you know, this is a film that a lot of kids will want to go to see, and I'm not sure that it's right for a certain age group of children. But hey.
But as you said, like obviously we've had loads of those parental death scenes, but I think, which we'll get into later. Obviously, the thing about Martha, it wouldn't have been so strong, I guess, if we hadn't have had that at the beginning. And shot so beautifully.
Right, I'm going to go through some questions now. As I said, we had over 100. I'm not going to read out 100 questions. A lot of them do cover the same ground. If you didn't get your question read out, I'm sorry. I'm not going through them. I'm just going through them in the order we received them. So, first one's from Chris Grogan, who says, hashtag no more dream sequences. He says, did anyone else find it strange they were showing Lex Luthor's assistant, Mercy Graves, played by Tao Okamoto, a lot through the film for her just to be blown up by Lex's bomb? She was just a small character, but her screen time was a lot. I felt invested in her. Overall, I enjoyed the film. Went in with the lowest expectations. Or the lowest expectations. So what do we think about that? Mercy Graves. Poor old Mercy Graves. There's no mercy, but lots of graves. In that sequence, she gets blown up in the Capitol bomb.
Huh. So isn't that a good thing that you've seen her on screen a lot? So if he's invested in her, then it starts to mean something.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
But also, it shows what a nasty hooligan Lex Luthor is. That he's planning to blow up his most trusted assistant.
Well, it does raise the question, did Lex Luthor have to put the jar of urine there himself? Because obviously he didn't have his assistant do it. Otherwise she would have been in on the plan.
Yeah, she's clearly not in on the plan.
And whose urine is it? Let's get to the
I don't know that. I don't know that if you put the urine there, you need to know there's a bomb there as well.
I think she'd have some questions.
Why?
Why have I got this jar of urine? Well, the main question I'd be asking.
Yeah, but what has that got to do with the bomb being there as well?
I don't know.
So I think she can place the bomb. I think she can place the urine.
Well, I think I'm that not... conversation should have been a scene in the film.
Perhaps it was.
Can you do my photocopying? Right. And then, oh, one other thing. I got this jar of piss. Can you put it? No, don't ask why.
The job spec in The Guardian must have been amazing. You know, must be on call 24/7. Take my memos. Organize my calendar. Take jars of piss into Senate hearings. It's got to be Lex Luthor's piss. Although he is the guy. And I can't. This is how we're starting off. We're talking about piss.
It's their fault.
He is the guy who would go the extra mile. It wouldn't surprise me if he had somehow tracked down Senator Finch's grandmother, assuming she's still alive, and got her to piss into a jar. He seems like a guy who's clearly psychotic.
That's the half an hour of extra footage they're putting into the R-rated cut. It's going to be a granny peeing in a jar.
She's called Martha as well.
Yeah, everybody in this movie should be called Martha.
Martha.
We talk about the bomb sequence because I feel that, you know, this is a 2.5 hour long movie, and we already know that there are deleted scenes out there, and Zack Snyder said that the Jimmy Olsen scene, so when Jimmy Olsen is in the movie, and we'll talk about this later on, gets bumped off at the beginning of the movie, which is a huge thing for comics fans.
So he's a CIA photographer.
He's a CIA photographer. Jimmy Olsen of the Daily Planet, a huge character in Superman mythology, is introduced without a name and then bumped off. But as Zack Snyder said, he does have a name in a longer version of the movie. But why not just leave that in? Like 10 seconds of just, "Hi, I'm Jimmy Olsen." Bang. Okay.
I don't think that would have made matters any better. I think people are enraged that it's Jimmy Olsen.
It's so. Just 10 seconds whenever you can then just probably, and I'm going to float this as an idea, you could lose the entire Holly Hunter subplot and not change a thing.
You could
about
lose quite a bit, yeah. I would say. Because I think my issue, I said it in my review, the Capitol blowing up scene is effective in that it's visually impressive and it does shock you. They do a really good thing where they pull all the sound out. But I knew it was coming when I saw it again last night and I was still like waiting for it. It works on that level, but it doesn't work on a story level because it doesn't tie into the plot. It doesn't have any consequences, as far as I could tell.
Yeah.
It's pointless.
It seems to, within the movie, serve two functions. One is to make the public even more suspicious of Superman than they already were, as if he would have anything to do with the explosion.
But they aren't, because the news reports say Superman was there and has disappeared, but then they never think it's him.
But there's a later report where it goes, "Was Superman involved?" And they're now beginning to think there's people hanging Superman effigies and all sorts of stuff.
I mean, if Superman's going to blow something up, he's going to use his laser eyes. He's not going to put a bomb down.
Yeah.
Is he?
And he's not going to use guns.
No.
Which is the other thing they're framing for.
But people don't know that Superman doesn't use guns. We know because we've had this conversation already, so I feel odd saying it again. But we've had 80 years of, you know, Superman mythology in the comics. We know what Superman is like. But if this character came down in real life, you wouldn't know his chosen method of killing someone. You don't know if he's going to kill someone or not. You don't know any of his motivations because he's new and he's come into this world and, you know, all you've seen of him.
But that's the thing. I found it quite confusing. We were talking about this earlier, but I found it quite confusing knowing what the world's is feeling about Superman at the beginning of this film, because there's a news report where they say the beloved statue of Superman in Metropolis Park in Heroes Monument or whatever it is.
Heroes Park,
So, which implies that the world loves him
and
cherishes him. But then all the only footage you see is of people who hate him or people looking scared of him. And I just found that quite strange. I thought that they could easily start this film with Superman in a good place and he's happy and people are loving him, and then gradually Lex turns that around and sours it. But instead, he's
no. That would like mean, you know, a well written script and like thought out characters, and you know, we just didn't have time for that.
Yeah, I just thought that would be an easy fix.
But that's an interesting thing about the representation of Superman in this movie. It doesn't feel like it's fun to be Superman at any point in this movie. It doesn't feel to me that he's allowed to be Superman very often in the film. There's one montage of him doing heroic deeds, pulling that ship along in the Arctic
montage.
Saving the space shuttle from exploding.
Saving a family on a roof.
Saving a family on a roof. But again, I have issues with that because there's a sheen of suspicion or distrust of Superman, the character, in the movie. And I feel like comes, and I wish I had more time to get into this with Zack Snyder, but I didn't.
that I seen that to me comes from Zack Snyder. For example, that scene where the family, the group of families are being rescued in the flood, Superman is hanging above them. He's staring at them. He's almost mocking them in a way, almost judging them, almost, you know, floating above them. Look what I can do. I'll save you when I'm damn ready. That's what it feels like.
Yeah, that's
to me
very
in
odd,
that sequence.
I thought that was a really odd shot.
Yeah. It's sort of beatific, the sort of, you know, casting Superman as this Christ-like figure, this mm-hmm. God who makes decisions about who lives and who dies, when he has such incredible power. That to me feels wrong. I wanted Superman to be having fun in this movie. I wanted Superman to be doing good and not to be so tortured by every decision that he makes.
But isn't that the point? Because if other people aren't distrusting Superman, then Batman comes off even crazier than he does already. Because there is no, like, he comes off, you know, right wing and yeah. awful quite a lot of the time. Because, you know, he yeah. distrusts Superman, and like, if there's even 1% chance he's our enemy, you know, we must take it as an absolute certain. I mean,
this is a Dick Cheney line,
absolute
I believe.
Nonsense.
Dick Cheney, yeah.
So, if everyone loves Superman, and then Batman's just this crazy guy off on the side, like, who hates him and is branding people,
but they, yeah.
then he is the villain.
Mm.
And he can't be, because you have to have he's tried to present it of two sides of, you know, of this equation, which are equally balanced. And to do that, he has to, you know, present Superman with, you know, some distrust from the world. And
no, I totally get that. I totally get that, and it's fine. I think that when Superman goes to the Senate to state his case, that there are people in the crowd who both love Superman. There's a shot where you see people. There's an extra who's very angry about Superman next to an extra who loves Superman. Mm. Yay! And that's fine. And I think that would actually be the case if you had a character like that, a figure like that, that appeared in the real world. But there's something about trying to shoehorn a character like Superman, I think, into that real world that template, that real world prism almost, that doesn't quite work for me. You know, Man of Steel tried it and got a little bit po-faced at times, and I just want my Superman to be clean cut and optimistic and bright and shining and a star and a guy who's as comfortable saving cats from trees as he is saving Air Force
and
One.
And that's not completely unrealistic, because you have nice people in real life. You know, not everyone is depressed and brooding and stuff. I just thought, I think it was Devin Faraci who said in one of his articles that there was an opportunity in the Capitol for Superman to step forward and do a Mr. Smith Goes to Washington style
yeah.
inspirational mm-hmm. speech and get his point of view across. Before, and then everyone's on his side or whatever, and then the bomb goes off, as opposed to what it is, where he just comes in, and you very rarely in this film get Superman's point of view.
Yeah.
He's just sitting there. You just have scenes where he's just sitting there staring into space, and it's like, I want to know what he's thinking, and I thought Superman was very underserved, and I thought Clark Kent was very underserved as well. I wanted to see more of him being Clark Kent.
Which is so strange to me, because the film does feel like a Man of Steel sequel that has had Batman parachuted into
yeah.
it. If you look at it, if you think, really look at the film and examine how many times Bruce Wayne has a scene with a Superman character.
Mm-hmm.
I think he and Lois Lane cross paths once at the end. There's obviously that meeting between Clark and Bruce and Lex at Lex's house. Apart from that, Batman and Bruce Wayne feels very self-contained. He feels like he's in his own movie, and every now and again Superman will show up in that movie.
Yeah.
But it does feel to me like, and I know that whenever Ben Affleck came on, he brought Chris Terrio on to rewrite the screenplay and to, you know, give Batman more to do, because it didn't start as a Batman-Superman movie. That's fairly well documented. But I just wonder if more could have been done to interact those characters a little bit more. Should we have another question?
Mm-hmm.
Just another 89 questions to go. Okay, we're getting a lot of questions about the dream sequence, or dream sequences rather. But so we'll start off here from one from Adrian Cash, who says, "Hi, gang. What the F was going on with the Inception dream within the dream sequence? Was the Flash a dream? Papers were suspiciously flying about the place when the Bat awoke, or did he just disturb them himself when he startled himself awake?" Which is quite an achievement. I've only seen this once, so maybe I need to see it again for the answer, but the papers conflustered me. Yours conflusteredly, Adrian Cash. Okay, so there are four dream sequences in this movie, by my reckoning.
Go on.
There's the one at the beginning,
yeah,
where we see the
bat elevator.
The bat elevator. I like that image. I thought it was really nice.
It's not a practical way to get around.
It's really not.
It really isn't.
Train the bats.
There's the vision of the future. Mm-hmm. Whatever is going on in the future, and where Superman is some sort of dystopic despot, and then Then there's the Flash's message to Bruce Wayne after that.
So that's the second dream. That's a dream within a dream.
Yeah, so that's
like
three.
American Werewolf in London.
Yeah. Yeah, American Wolf. But, you know, this is even probably even more batshit insane than Nazi zombies.
Literally, yeah.
And then you have the other dream sequence where Bruce Wayne goes to see his parents' grave, with emphasis particularly, if you notice, on Martha Wayne. Martha Wayne. Martha.
Martha?
Martha. Martha Wayne.
I don't get it.
Martha Wayne.
Oh, Martha.
And then he gets attacked by the giant man bat thing.
And then there's another one.
That's four.
No, well, then
there's Superman's.
There's because he meets Kevin Costner.
That's true, but that's more of a just hallucination, isn't it?
He's
just,
oh, okay.
Yeah,
so how many hallucinations
he
sequences
did he have? Yeah, he went to Burning Man. And I have. I mean, there's a lot to get into just with this dream stuff, but I have issues in that both Batman and Superman learn new information in a dream, and to the best of my knowledge, that's not how dreams work. Batman has his dream in the desert, which is actually, because I've read the Artov book, is actually the bay between Gotham and Metropolis, which has been dried up following some kind of radioactive disaster.
Okay.
In the future, that's what that's meant to be. Kryptonite is involved in that dream.
Mm-hmm.
Batman doesn't know about kryptonite.
He does.
At that point.
He does. He does. He's already aware of kryptonite. His story to Alfred that the white Portuguese, which is the plot development, if anyone was following me on Twitter, it's a plot development taken from the Naked Gun, is bringing in a dirty bomb. He's lying to Alfred at that point. He knows what kryptonite is. He knows that it's kryptonite, and he knows what kryptonite is used for.
Does he?
Okay. Yeah,
all
he
right.
does.
Okay.
But no, it's a fair point. First time I saw it as well, I thought, he's got major plot development from a dream. What the hell is going on? But then you're right, Superman is essentially told to get back on the horse and be a hero again by...
And told a story.
Yeah, told a lovely story by his dad.
But that's a hallucination sequence, so
yeah.
You can learn new information in hallucination sequences.
Right, okay.
But not
noted.
Dream sequence.
Noted.
Yeah. Now, aren't dreams where your brain sorts out information that you already know, so you can have revelations as you look at things a different way?
So you think that his dad told him that story, but he just wasn't listening?
Didn't Paul McCartney dream the melody to Yesterday?
He did, yeah. He woke up. He had.
And then he had a vision from the Flash.
He had it
straight afterwards.
He did. He went. It's Ringo. Ringo is the key. You must save Ringo. Mac is like, what? Just doing his thumbs aloft.
I want to see that film.
That'd be amazing. The Flash just goes back and inspires all the Beatles' greatest hits. What were we talking about?
What's
dream,
my dream sequence?
Dream sequences.
But I don't know the question. What's the question?
The question was, what's going on in the dream sequence?
Well, it's a dark side. There's multiple references to the dark side. Who I've just printed out 17 pages of Wikipedia notes on dark side, which I'll be reading in full now. No, the dark side is basically DC's biggest bad. He is the tyrannical ruler of the planet Apocalypse, which is not spelt like you would expect. It's got K's in it. And he's basically the Justice League's main enemy. And so he presumably is going to be the big bad in the Justice League film. Yes. So there's a lot of setting up going on here.
He's like the Thanos.
He predates, predates Thanos, to my understanding.
Yeah.
And if I could describe what he looks like, there's a picture of him here. He's wearing what looks like a sort of metal, shiny waistcoat.
Yeah.
With a little nice hood.
Looks like Al Murray, the pub landlord, if he just bronzed himself.
He's not a very nice looking man.
Oh, that's not fair. And Al Murray, pub landlord, he's a lovely looking man.
So, and he basically the Amiga symbol that you see in that dream, sort of burnt into the desert, is his symbol. Mm-hmm. And the bug men are his elite.
Parademons
and all this sort of stuff. So, and then, I mean, we get to the end of the movie where it's implied heavily that Lex Luthor has been controlled by Darkseid.
Contacted, I say. Certainly, it's a deleted scene that they've already released since talking to Zack Snyder. They released it yesterday, Tuesday, in which you see Lex Luthor being arrested at the Kryptonian scout ship by a SWAT team. And when they arrive, Lex Luthor's he's talking to some sort of horned entity. I'm imagining that's not the DC Extended Universe's version of Darkseid. I don't think we're going to see him that way. It's probably more an emissary, as the other was for Thanos in the MCU.
Yeah, so it's interesting we got two movies coming out, one DC and one Marvel, both involving an alien overlord coming to Earth and having to, you know, battle a team of heroes. Yeah, it's going to be interesting.
Who will be without the most powerful members?
Yeah.
At least at first.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But I the apocalyptic Batman's apocalyptic dream sequence, I actually quite liked it.
Yeah. My theory about the dream sequence is that they're connected. The Flash's message, the dark side, the vision of the dark side, Superman future, is a message from the Flash. They're all connected. It's just, you know, he's somehow, in the same way that characters in John Carpenter's Prince of Darkness beamed a message from the future back to the characters in their dreams using tachyons and quantum physics and stuff that I frankly don't understand. We need Professor Brian Cox to explain this shit. But Flash, who we all know can run so fast he can travel through time and travel back in time and all sorts of stuff, is somehow using his powers to beam a vision of a possible future of Superman gone bad to Batman, saying this could happen. Now, there's two reasons for this. One, it reinforces Batman's paranoia about Superman, obviously, that, you know, he could become the malevolent maniac that he fears, unstoppable, unkillable. But it also hints at Lois Lane being key. Superman, in the dream sequence, confronts Batman. He says, "She was my world." And then I think he says, "You took her from me," as well. Which either indicates that Batman was somehow instrumental in Lois Lane's death, or maybe they were, you know, bumping uglies. And
is it
and
definitely
Clark.
Lois?
Well, yeah,
it's not Martha.
Not Martha.
Who's Martha? Is there a Martha in this film?
We're all Martha, Chris.
It's got to be Lois. I would say it's Lois.
Is that, now, correct me on my DC lore here, but that's the Injustice Gods Among Us version of Superman, right?
In that bit,
yeah. So that's what happens in Injustice. That isn't Lois dead and. The video game, okay. Which has a comic around it. When, you know, he's an evil dude, and Lois has been killed, and there he is with his glowy eyes.
Yeah, someone asked. So many pages of questions here, but someone actually pointed out that seemed to be a reference to the video game. Like, Zack Snyder seems to be a very video gamey type dude, so that seems to be an overt reference to it. But for me, that sequence, apart from again showing Superman as someone who's evil and not to be trusted, was visually very interesting.
But isn't it just a case of throwing more stuff at the screen and then just hoping something sticks, rather than crafting an elegant storyline that makes actual sense?
You're right. It does feel a little bit disconnected. The American film critic Scott Weinberg, who's a follow on Twitter, tweeted that several times watching Batman Superman for the first time, I had to pinch myself or to double check that the reels weren't being shown out of order, because there were two scenes that just took me by surprise. And I think one of them is the dream sequence, which just comes out of nowhere. Uh-huh. You see Bruce Wayne, he's downloading the stuff he's half inched from Lex Luthor, and then suddenly, bang, dream. Yeah.
It's not even clear that he's dreaming vision. Unless you know, there's not even a shot of him sort of closing his eyes. It just sort of kicks right into that.
Yeah.
It's confusing.
Yeah. Until he wakes up, and then that's the only way there's the only way you know he's been dreaming. And the second one, we'll talk about it later on, is the after the Capitol bomb goes off, the next sequence is Lex Luthor going to LexCorp, where Batman has stolen a kryptonite. And that feels really weird. It's just...
Bullet casings all over the floor. I was really confused by that. I didn't know what was... And there's dead bodies, and you're like, what?
Yeah, is he going to the Capitol building? Oh, no, it's LexCorp. What's happened here? But, you know, it all kind of makes sense once you... it explains itself pretty much soon after that. But, yeah, back to the dystopian vision thing. Yeah, for me, it's a message from the Flash. And then, just to compound it, the Flash appears himself, and clearly I'm guessing he hasn't got complete control of his powers at this point, although it does seem to be an older version of Ezra Miller.
He looks not like Ezra Miller. I mean, I know it's Ezra Miller, but I think a lot of people aren't going to...
He's got a beard.
He has got a beard, but I think a lot of people aren't going to... You know, I hate to say normal people, but people that maybe have not picked up a comic book or whatever aren't going to know that both of those Ezras are the same Ezra, if that makes sense. It's the Flash, the same Flash.
Well, I think you're going to get a lot of people who don't read the comics at all being slightly baffled by who's appearing.
Oh, and that's a whole other
later on with the metahuman stuff. Who are these people? And it's not, you know, it's not something that's confined to you know, DC. For example, if you'd watched Thor.
Yeah, of course.
When it came out, and then suddenly Jeremy Renner turns up with a bow and arrow. Obviously, the comic book fans know who that is, but everyone else is going, "That's a bit what's happening here?" Mm-hmm. You know. So, that I guess it feels a bit confusing for people who don't know the comic books. But yeah, I don't know.
It's a case of rushing it, isn't it? It's a case of rushing through all this to get to Justice League as soon as possible. Whereas Marvel did it over. Tell me how many films?
65.
Well, 13th is about to come out, but it's you know, by the time the Avengers was out, that was actually only the sixth movie.
But I mean, this
but
is
it took
the,
4 years.
Yeah, but this is the. I mean, if we're counting Man of Steel, which I suppose we should, this is only the second. But suddenly we've got seven superheroes introduced in some small way, whether by they're in the film or they're Lex Luthor's designed the clip art logos for them.
I mean, yeah.
It just feels, the whole thing feels rushed because they've, you know, let Marvel get, you know, so far ahead of them.
But I think that may work in its advantage further down the line, which is a weird thing to say because, of course, when you're watching a film, you don't want to think of it as a bigger picture, which will make sense in hindsight. But I think it could be a really, really strong film eventually if DC's plan comes off. If everything kind of, you know, once the Justice League is out, if everything pieces together properly, then we may look back on this and think, okay, actually, this was a really, really clever way once we know about Darkseid, everything else. Yeah. But
this is George Lucas's prequels argument, and it doesn't stand up when you get all the films out there, because he was like, when you've seen three, you'll understand why one is so, you know, such a masterpiece. And then, of course, that did not come to pass.
That's very.
But this is so fractured in comparison to those.
I was very curious. I was wondering why they didn't put the Justice League character clips at the end of the movie. It's very odd. They're building up to this battle between Batman and Superman, and then there's that scene which just has nothing to do with anything, where he's just looking at the clips.
Fan payoff.
I just thought, why not put that at the end of the film?
I suppose because it gives more reason for Affleck to kind of say, let's get the gang together, guys.
Maybe they were worried about the perception would be that they were copying Marvel if they started doing stings at the end. Maybe that's why they didn't do one. It's quite noticeable that they didn't do one.
It's not their thing, is it?
I think that's very much why they're not doing
it. They're trying to differentiate themselves. But
it doesn't have to be a sting. It can be, you know, the end of the story is this, not, you know, wait till the end of the credits and you'll get it. It can be part of the story, but it can come, you know.
The ending is already extraordinarily protracted. I think if you started adding more scenes on after the funeral, it was.
Yeah.
But at the same point, if all you're doing is switching the scenes, then you've got to the ending quicker anyway, so you're not as, I don't know.
I guess Batman and Wonder Woman have that scene where they talk about forming the Justice League, which wouldn't make sense if Batman had not already seen the clips. But I don't know, what do we think of the actual clips? I'm sure that will be a question, but...
Oh, yeah.
So many. Did that make you want to see an Aquaman movie or a Cyborg movie?
Personally, for me, I'm the hugest Ezra Miller fan, so that bit for me, I was very excited to see him. But other than that, I think, Chris, you were saying, you were saying about James Wan that you don't think he probably had any kind of say in what the Aquaman little bit looked like.
He didn't.
No, I mean, so it all feels very like, here's the just presenting the characters, but there's no identity, there's no kind of personality. You get a slight look from Ezra, but other than that, I mean, Cyborg just is on a back wall. Like, there's nothing of any interest to newbies, I think.
That sequence, the metahuman sequence, is purely for the fans. I actually think that, you know, obviously it slows down the movie a little bit where it comes, but it does make sense in terms of Bruce has already seen this stuff. He knows the clips. I mean, you could have a sequence earlier on where you see Bruce watching this stuff and going, what? But I think it's important that Wonder Woman, Diana. She's never actually called Diana in the film. You get the stewardess calling her Miss Prince. Otherwise, you get Wonder Woman. Now she's aware of the metahuman, so she's able to process that information and suddenly go, hang on, there are more people like me and Superman and Batman in the world. Oh, that's interesting. Okay, let's see what we can do with this.
See, I thought when Batman visits Lex in his prison cell at the end of the film, I thought that was why he was going to see him, was to get more information on the metahumans, but he doesn't really mention it.
Yeah,
because surely Lex probably has more information.
Yeah, quite possible. I get the feeling that
ask
pretty much
gift
all
files
his
for the logos and stuff.
Yeah, I get the feeling all his information's in there, and I think a large part of Justice League will be preoccupied with the hunt for these guys. You know, finding Aquaman is, you know, like a drop in the ocean, isn't it? Really,
quite literally.
Yeah, how are you gonna do that? Couple of points you raised there. I mean, yeah. Jason Momoa was cast before James Wan came onto Aquaman. And that's something that obviously is going to happen across all these extended universes going forward, whether it's Marvel or Star Wars. You're going to get directors coming on to work with people that they had no say in casting.
Yeah.
But I do wonder, you know, is Jason Momoa the right person to play this character going forward?
I
thought, you know, because I think everyone's been slightly sceptical, maybe, about the casting of that character.
Should be Adrian Grenier.
Should be Adrian Grenier. He's furious, and I was hoping that this scene you know, when we got to see him strut his funky stuff in Dawn of Justice, that it would dispel all the doubts, and you go, oh, well, that's why they cast Jason Momoa. But instead, all we get is a scene of him swimming and punching the camera.
Yeah, that should have been like a moment.
Yeah, it just seemed weirdly underwritten. It seems like you have the opportunity to craft a little vignette and just have a little bit of lightness or a little bit of wit or something. Just have Aquaman, the very first time that anyone has seen this character on the big screen, have something, have him do something memorable.
And he was just like blue stealing down the camera.
He's just sort of a man glaring at a camera. And then he swims off. And it's just like, I don't know if I want to see a whole film about that, based on that.
Lack of
hopefully he won't be glaring down the camera for the whole film.
Just him breaking different cameras. That'd be amazing. It's just like a faux documentary where they're just hunting him down. He just breaks a camera and they have to find another one.
Werner Herzog has to be sent in. That's a film. Werner Herzog and James Cameron team up to go into
to find Aquaman.
Atlantis to find Aquaman. That'd be amazing. All of those character moments, I mean, Wonder Woman we'll talk about. This is taking so long. But Wonder Woman we'll talk about soon. But The Flash is the one I'm most excited about. I think Ezra Miller is a fantastic, fantastic actor. I'm not wild about the choice of director in that movie, Seth Graham Smith. But nevertheless, he's a fantastic actor. And that scene is kind of indicates that you could have fun with that character if it is indeed Barry Allen. Whichever version of the character he's going to end up playing, I think you can have fun with that. Cyborg, and you know, I've said this in the podcast before. I don't think there was a clamor for a Cyborg movie before Dawn of Justice, and I certainly don't think there is one now. I will still be surprised if that movie gets made, but there it is. It's a man on a rack screaming. That's what that is.
Is it going to be like a Saw type film? I don't know. Someone did point out that that the Flash basically causes more damage than the value of the money the guy would have taken from the till. Like, he trashes the whole store. And also there's sound effects when he moves, but there aren't any sound effects on the video until then. Pedant alert. Anyway,
but I'm excited about The Flash. I think it could be fun. I think Ezra Miller playing a sort of greasy sort of, you know, hip version of that character could be quite fun.
The TV show is great.
I've never seen the TV show. I got the first season. I've got to get around. I'm really intrigued by the Flash Supergirl team up that happened this week. I really want to see that, because apparently that's more fun. And another film we can mention. Right, let's have another question. Here's a quite long question from Rob Cross. He says, I'll finish with the big point. Why didn't Superman see the explosives in the wheelchair with his X-ray vision? That's explained. Superman himself, Clark says himself, I wasn't looking. He'd sort of switched off at that point, so he wasn't scanning it to see whether Scoot McNairy was a badin.
Why didn't he see the jar of piss? It's the bigger question.
Who goes into a room looking for a jar of piss? Nick, certainly I don't.
Always, when you're around.
Why does Batman put a tracking device on a truck and then proceed to chase after it, shooting wildly?
I've got a follow-up question to that. There are two tracking devices in this film. Both of them make a loud beeping noise. It's like, if you're making a secret tracking device, maybe don't make one that goes beep, 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 beep. It's like, what purpose has that got? Two different devices.
What's the second?
The first one is the one that Olsen has.
Jimmy Olsen.
And the second is the Batman one, and both of them are shown in close-up beeping extraordinarily loudly. It was an interesting decision by the sound editor.
Yeah, it's just to show that this thing is a tracking device. Beep, beep. Yeah, why does Batman put a tracking device in the truck and then proceed to chase it after it's shooting wildly? That's a very, very good question. Also, in that sequence, Batman kills people. He kills people in the dream sequence, and some people are angry about that because Batman obviously doesn't kill. But in this one, he does kill, and he literally, if you watch it, you can actually see it if you slow it down when you get in the Blu-ray. He drives his Batmobile out of the building, on the second floor of the building, into the truck and drives it into a guy's face. You actually see it, and that guy ain't coming back from that. He ain't coming back from that. So Batman does kill people in this movie. Where do we stand on that?
Absolutely fine.
Johnny's got no problem with it. He grew up in the north. He's fine with vigilantes killing people.
No, I mean, in terms of Batman's character, I'm absolutely fine with it. Batman killed for, like, at the start of the comics, Batman killed people. That is a if you really know your comics, which I don't. But I know this.
A quick Google search.
I know this, that Batman did kill people at the start of the comics, and, you know, him not killing
them. They moved away gradually.
But, you know, you have different eras of Batman. Why can't.
Superman at one point held a gun. You can't really. You know, when a character's finding its feet in the, you know, in the early 30s and 40s, you can't, you know, gradually they evolve to have a character trait, which Superman doesn't kill.
You evolve back and forth, and you know, the character parameters can change, you know, because, you know, Batman, you know, used to have that shark repellent spray, and now he probably doesn't have it anymore. Like, I mean, that was just a different era of Batman, and I don't understand why you can't have a different interpretation of this character based on things that are actually in his past anyway.
Does no one ever get killed in a Marvel film?
Oh yeah, loads of people. One of the things that's kind of weird to me, that you know, Captain America, who by and large doesn't kill in the comic books, is offing people left, right, and centre in the Marvel movies, and no one seems to be getting their knickers in a twist about that. But Batman, I think, is more of a, you know, people put him on a pedestal in a way, and I feel that, you know, it's. But I think that shows how much the character in this movie has become bitter and twisted.
I kind of don't
time.
Have a problem with it, to be honest. I have more of a problem with Superman, because I think you want to show the differences between Batman and Superman. That could be one of the differences.
Yeah.
In the way they go about cleaning up the city.
Yeah, for example, Nick, at the beginning of the film, when he saves Lois from the evil terrorist warlord bloke in Nairobi, not Nairobi, Nairobi, he flies him through, what, three walls at the speed of sound? I mean, that guy's at least going to Holby City. He's not walking away from that.
It's okay, because he's definitely a terrorist, because Lois Lane asked, "Are you a terrorist?"
And he
established that he was.
"No, I'm a journalist."
You said, "Yeah, no, I'm a journalist."
No, I'm a journalist. And Jimmy Olsen goes, "I'm a CIA agent."
Oh, what's Jimmy. Happening?
Let me see the script again.
Yeah. Where was the Daily Planet's obituary for Jimmy Olsen? That's
so Superman. So Superman does take someone out.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I've got more of a problem with that.
Okay. Well, he certainly severely injures him.
Because
at the end of Man of Steel.
If he's being framed for killing a bunch of people, which he hasn't done, it kind of detracts from that. If he has killed somebody in the same scene, it's just. That's just weird, you know.
Yeah, I'm guessing that he doesn't actually kill that guy; that he just leaves him with severe spinal injuries, which is absolutely fine and heroic and the sort of thing you want.
Go to the NHS, the Nairobi Health Service.
So the question from Rob Cross was: what was Lex Luthor's motivation?
He's evil. He's a super villain. Next question.
Daddy.
Daddy issues. He's. He knows things. It bugs me. He knows too much. He knows stuff that... How does he know that Clark Kent is Superman? How does he figure that out?
I mean, it's less how does he know that and more why does he not use that information to not be in jail at the end? Like, break me out or I'll tell everyone your secret. I mean, you can say that to Superman or to
Superman's
Batman.
Superman's not around,
to be fair. Well, he can say it to Batman then, because he certainly knows Batman's secret identity. He could say it to Wonder Woman. He has files on all these people. Why is he not using this information? Why is he happy in his cell at the end?
Well, by that point, he's crackers, so no one's going to believe him anyway, are they?
So he's Jim Carrey at the end of Batman Forever?
There are elements, maybe, of that, possibly. But you're right. I mean, there's a lot of times in this movie where people have information that they choose to do nothing with it. So Batman is warned by the Flash. Flash comes back specifically, goes to great lengths, you'd imagine, to run back in time and go, "Hey, Batman, Lois Lane is the key. She's the key." Which Batman does nothing with that information whatsoever. Clark Kent figures out on their first meeting with Bruce Wayne, that Bruce... my reading of that is he figures out that Bruce and Batman are one and the same.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, he's not daft, does nothing with that information. And I would have liked personally a scene where maybe he shows up in the Batcave with Superman and goes, "I know where you live, I know where you are, I could trash," whoops, like a cat in a pushing something over from the table, just pushes a Batmobile off a cliff. Oops, I could do that. Oh, what a shame. I would have liked a scene like that. And you do wonder about some of the information. But Zack Snyder said a little bit, and we discussed a little bit in the conversation, that, you know, for him secret identities are daft. And
he sounds like just the right man to be directing.
But he's right in a way. I mean, the old joke about Superman is, you know, Lois Lane is a rubbish journalist because literally her boyfriend puts on a pair of glasses, she can't tell the difference between him and Superman. And they blew that apart in Man of Steel by having her figure out that Clark Kent and Superman were the same in about 30 seconds. And that's fine. So why can't someone else make that same leap? We all do. We all go, well, Henry Cavill as Clark Kent and Henry Cavill as Superman look identical. I mean, I think they part their hair slightly differently. So, you know, and the Clark Kent in this movie doesn't differentiate himself from Superman that much. It's not like the Chris Reeve version of the character who's stumbling and bumbling and faffing around and stammering and all sorts.
Yeah, you're right. He's not playing like a dual performance at all, is
no.
he? He's just put some glasses on.
He just put some glasses on and drop boxes. That's all. That's what he does.
Then we don't really get enough time with Clark to even... know what he's like anyway.
No, true, belly.
But we have had a movie with Clark.
No, we haven't. There's one scene at the end of Man of Steel where there's literally the last, very last scene.
No, but he's Clark in Smallville.
Yeah, he's
always Clark.
Clark in Man of Steel and the Clark at the end of Man of Steel are the same person. There's he's not doing a performance as
glasses,
Clark Kent. He's got glasses. He's a different person. But apart from that, I think it's interesting that Zack Snyder's made a choice by and large to do away with secret identities, and that, you know, that's fun by having. But you're right, Lex Luthor doesn't really do an awful lot with that information, and also Bruce
Maybe
Wayne.
He's like, everyone must know this. I mean, it's so obvious.
It is.
I don't need to say it because everyone knows.
Lawrence Fishburne doesn't know.
Yeah, because a lot of people thought that Man of Steel he did know that Clark and Superman were one and the same, but it's made very explicit in this movie that he doesn't.
I felt like towards the end he was kind of clocking onto it. But well, then I was like,
surely it must have dawned on him then. So, you know, that did worry me a little bit at the end when they... It did surprise me a little bit when they didn't just come clean at the end and the Daily Planet goes, Superman's dead, and then page 37, Clark Kent also died covering the battle in Gotham. And you're kind of going, come on, Barry.
Well, especially if there's like the only two casualties.
The only two casualties looked identical. You know, why didn't they just come out with it then and go, what do they have to lose by saying, yes, all along we didn't realise this, but it looks like one of our guys was Superman. What have they got to lose by saying that? Can they get sued? I don't know.
By who?
By people who might be... I don't know. But people sue anyone for anything these days.
It's awful, isn't it?
But Lex's plan... It's kind of a bigger issue, but he's got several plans going on. Doomsday, I guess Doomsday is a contingency plan.
But for what?
For in case Batman and Superman didn't kill each other.
But he's already got it. He's already made it. You know, he can't undo Doomsday. By the time Superman arrives back at the scout ship, having not to cut off Batman's head, or Batman hasn't killed Superman, Doomsday's already on the way. And
let's figure out exactly how many plans he's got. He's got the kryptonite, which he doesn't end up using because it gets taken from him.
Because his plan is all along to have Batman steal it.
Really?
It seems to me.
No.
Because whenever he goes into LexCorp and sees... He talks about it. He talks about it on the rooftop with Lois. He goes, 18 months of push, 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 when finally the seeds are planted. I'm paraphrasing wildly, but... And when he goes into LexCorp and sees that the kryptonite has been stolen by Batman, he even does a little sinister smile. Just a little hint. Just to make you think, okay, yes, everything is proceeding as I have foreseen. Yeah. Which is a bit of a leap.
Okay, right, I didn't get that. Okay, so
why doesn't he weaponize the kryptonite himself? Why does he wait for someone else to steal it? I mean, he's a super duper clever clog scientist bloke, right? So why doesn't he put some kryptonite in the wheelchair bomb that Scoop McNairy is sitting on top of and see what that does to Superman?
I thought that's what's going to happen as well.
So that's plan one, kryptonite. Plan two is to try and get Batman and Superman to kill each other.
By blowing up Congress. That's presumably to push Batman into fighting Superman.
It's one of the things, yeah.
What?
Yeah.
He has a plan to kidnap the Martha.
Yeah, there's a Nairobi thing.
Yeah,
there's just a lot going on, but none of it seems very obvious of what he's trying to achieve from any of it.
Meanwhile, you have Lois Lane slowly begin to realise that Lex Luthor is the guy behind it. Before she can do anything with that information, Lex Luthor kidnaps her.
My theory is that Lois Lane could be cut from this entire film. Because
whoa, that's even more hardcore than you can cut Holly Hunter and Scoop McNairy from the film. I got poo-pooed for that.
No, I agree with that.
Because
I think you can cut Superman.
Just a Batman fighting himself at the end.
I think she's the most underserved character in the film, especially on the second viewing. She gets rescued twice.
Yeah,
she has got the bath scene, and she's sort of faffing about with the whole bullet subplot, which doesn't come to anything.
Not really.
Come to anything. She never finishes her investigation, or she gets the information, but she doesn't use it in any way.
Nor do we learn why Lex has given his people experimental bullets that could be traced back to him. We don't really learn that either. Why not just give them normal bullets?
Just a lapse.
Yeah. We do learn that Perry can summon a helicopter like that. That's someone you want to know, isn't it? Because he gets that so quickly for her.
Have you not been told about our helicopter? You can use it. It's just upstairs.
It's really small. It's made of Lego, but you can use it. At a moment's notice, yeah.
All newspapers and magazines have a helicopter.
That's the most unrealistic thing.
It gets really crowded on the top of this building, obviously, because we've got Heaton and Closer and Grazia here, and all the helicopters vying for helipad space.
But yeah, Lex's plan ultimately, I mean, is so he pits Batman and Superman against each other, but just in case, he builds this unstoppable Kryptonian mutant thing that
he won't be able to control in any way.
But I think that's a nod to sort of 50 science fiction movies. He's the scientist who feels he can control things. You're like in The Thing from Another World, there's a scientist who believes he can communicate with the creature and reason with the creature, and I think that's a kind of nod to people like that.
Was that why he put his own blood into Doomsday so that Doomsday wouldn't attack him? Because it looks like Doomsday, the very first thing he does is try and attack Lex.
Yeah, he gets it massively wrong.
Which I thought was weird. It's like, that'd be interesting if he comes to attack Lex and then sort of senses, you know, their family or whatever. And
yeah.
Or you get a scene where Lex is like, oh, hello, my child, and then, you know, he rips his head off.
Pats him on the head. either of those would have been quick little beat.
Yeah, or they go to a park in Metropolis and have fun, they're on the swings, or they have an ice cream together, you know, it could be fun.
I mean, I'm thinking about now Superman Returns, and Lex's plan didn't make a lot of sense in that either. That was the real estate plan, you know, on the jagged rocks.
Yeah.
I mean, is that just a thing about Lex Luthor, his plans are inherently stupid and...
Well, his plan in Superman the movie is to basically destroy California, pitch it into the sea, so all the real estate he's bought, which is rubbish, will become prime real estate because California is gone. Yeah, that doesn't make a lot of sense either. But maybe that's just maybe his Achilles heel. But he's someone who's clearly driven by rage and daddy issues and a sense of, as Jeremy Irons says, powerlessness. He says in a view, powerlessness. So you see someone who's driven by those feelings, but I don't think it necessarily coheres into an all-round decent scheme. I mean, building a monster, you don't have a... there's no way to destroy Doomsday. He doesn't really think that through, I think. So he could be ultimately the ruler of a big smoking pile of rubble if Doomsday had his way. But let's talk about, before we get into other things, I think we're covering a lot of the things that people have asked, but let's talk about Batman and Superman themselves. I mean, there are three meetings in the film. They're spaced out pretty evenly, I'd say, around about the 30-minute mark, the hour mark, and the 90-95. The fight comes about 2 hours in, actually, doesn't it?
Uh-huh.
So fairly evenly. So the first meeting's between Clark and Bruce, where Clark Kent, beat reporter for the Daily Planet, doesn't seem to know who Bruce Wayne is, but that's neither here nor there.
He's covering a different city.
He is covering a different city, which is 30 miles away. But
I didn't realise how close they were. That was lucky, wasn't it?
It's fortunate. Fortunate, yeah. I mean, obviously there's precedent for it, but yeah. You could argue that they were moved just to facilitate the storytelling.
I don't know why. No, they wouldn't do that.
Yeah, okay. That would be daft. But yeah, so what did we think of the first meeting of Clark and Bruce?
At the party.
At Lex Luthor's party.
For the library.
Yes. Where Lex has a meltdown on stage and no one goes, that guy's too
blah, 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 open bar, blah, blah, blah. That's quite a good speech.
Yeah,
it's fine. It's fine. I'm struggling to remember the exact dialogue between the two of them.
Just kind of follows him, doesn't he, for the most part?
I mean, we do assume in that meeting, as Lex is introducing them, that he knows exactly who Clark Kent and Superman are and exactly who...
Yeah.
So, I mean, it makes more... I mean, he says, oh, look, Bruce Wayne is meeting Clark Kent, which is like... I mean, that's crazy. It's like saying Chris Hewitt is meeting Richard Branson and...
when?
But, like, who would make a thing of that?
Well, yeah, that was odd. That was odd. I didn't know why Lex would know. I know he'd know who Bruce Wayne is, but how would he know who Clark Kent is?
I mean...
Just unless he knows his secret identity, in which case he's just given away that he knows it.
It's one of those odd scenes that is written for
the trailer.
For the trailer, but for people watching the film rather than for actually serving the film, the plot of the film. Mm. Does that make sense?
Mm. But there were some nice moments. I liked how he shakes Clark's hand and goes, mm-hmm. Ooh, look at that grip. You know, there's nice moments in it.
There are some nice homoerotic moments, Nick.
Yeah, I just thought that first meeting was... Could have had a little bit more fun to it, maybe. You know, a little bit more sparky banter, repartee. Get into it very, very quickly. You know, what's your opinion about Vigilante in Gotham? Well, I think he's awesome. What do you think about Superman? Well, I think he's awesome. Okay, then we both think the people we are awesome. That's great. it could have been a little bit more, but I quite like the fact that Clark figured out that Bruce was Batman fairly quickly, and then obviously he started following him down the stairs. He didn't need to. He's got X-ray vision. He can see where he goes.
It's very true.
The best, my favorite thing about that party sequence is that Wonder Woman is there. Diana Prince is there. She's at a party, thrown by the guy who has pictorial evidence that she is like centuries old. And Lex Luthor doesn't seem to notice that she's there. I wonder if there's a deleted scene there. This is the thing. There's a lot of scenes in this movie, sadly, where you could go, I wonder if there's a deleted scene that makes sense of what's happening here.
But of course,
there's nothing.
Yeah, maybe. But my thing about that is, why is she at that party? She seems to be at the party on the off chance that someone will break into Lex Luthor's computer and steal the photograph that she's been trying to get hold of.
He's not stealing it. He's just cloning it.
Precisely.
So he still has the photo. So yeah. Why does she need that copy?
Yeah.
Does she just want to frame it? Does she not have her own copy and she needs it? Like, what is it for?
Maybe she left her flash drive at home.
Oh. But anyway, that just tickled me about that meeting. That she's, you know. I'll turn up on the party and the off chance that someone might steal. Oh, hey, look, there's someone is stealing Lex Luthor's files. Awesome. I will get in.
What was the relevance of the CCTV footage of Diana Prince using the ATM machine that Lex had?
It was just confirmation that she exists in the modern world.
And has a bank account.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, ATM machines, facial recognition software.
I was trying to figure out the relevance of the fact she was in Paris and using a bank machine, but
it was just I think that he maybe had facial recognition software set up that had a ping that had a hit on her, and there he goes, there she is.
But I mean, it could have been a situation like that photo of Nicolas Cage during the Civil War. It could have been like that. You would swear that was real, but it's not really fact, is it?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, this is true. Nicolas Cage, the centuries-old vampire actor, explains a lot. But a lot of people have been writing in as well, going, did you spot Chris Pine in the photograph of Wonder Woman?
Yeah.
Yes, we did spot Chris Pine.
Of course.
I didn't on the first go, to be fair.
Did you not? No.
A lot of people have been writing in saying, did you spot Nick Cage?
Johnny's convinced that the guy who kills Batman's parents
no longer.
I've disabused some of the notions. But he does look like Nick Cage. You're right,
does he?
He does, but you would know it would be Nick Cage because he'd be going, I'm killing your parents!
I've got fact. This is a real footnote. Sorry about this. A footnote to a footnote to a footnote.
I don't know where we're going with this podcast anymore.
The actor who plays young Bruce Wayne has also played young Johnny Knoxville.
Whoa.
And I've got a footnote to that. I looked up his age and I figured out how old Bruce Wayne is in this film.
Okay.
He's 46.
He's 46?
He's 46.
I was going to say 42, but okay, that's good.
46, yeah. Because 46. The actor playing the young Bruce Wayne in 1981 is 11. Trust me, I've done the math.
Okay.
I've crunched the numbers.
Okay, but when you get child actors, like how old was Edward Furlong when he played 10-year-old John Connor?
He was 37 years old.
But I think, you know, kid actors do play 2 to 3 years old. Like they are 2 to 3 years older than the characters that they play.
I've done the maths.
Look at Jacob Tremblay, who plays a 5-year-old in Room, and he's like 15 or 16 now.
Who's Tom Hanks in Big played?
Good point. But also, but that scene, okay, set in 1981, but shot probably in 2014 when that actor was 9. Mm. So I'm saying he's 44.
And I think he's probably playing. You know, he's 2 years old in the character he's playing, so I'm saying he's 42, which brings us back to your original age.
42. And what's the meaning of life?
42.
Bruce Wayne. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay. Why are the Waynes bringing their kid to see Excalibur?
Apparently they're
Zorro. Well, there's a poster of Zorro.
Ben Miller says, did anyone notice Chris Pine next to Wonder Woman in her 1918 picture? We've already said that. Yes, it is Chris Pine. It's Steve Trevor next to Wonder Woman. But anyone spot Ewan Bremner?
Yes.
At the end, the other two actors I can't identify as yet. They're not listed on IMDb, but Ewan Bremner, Spud.
Do you mean he gets his own logo, Lex Luthor design logo?
Oh, maybe.
Maybe he does.
Potato.
Maybe he does. Ewan Bremner from Trainspotting. I hope there's a sequence in Wonder Woman where he covers someone in human feces.
Maybe that's why she goes away for 100 years. She's like, I can't handle another one of those.
100 years ago, I had to watch you and Brenner's sheets.
that's really upping the ante on peach tea, and he does it first. Yeah. It's like the problem with Temple Crony's of Doom.
Crony's chocolate brownie mix.
The problem with Temple of Doom that he meets two swordsmen and shoots them, and then tries to shoot them and can't. And that's, you know, it's upping the ante on the Raiders joke, but the problem is it's a prequel, so it doesn't really work. It's like that.
Oh my god. All right.
Yep.
Tetchy Boozer, which is a great name, says, if Bruce Wayne was so determined to find out who the White Portuguese was, why didn't he just Google it like normal people do? But that's my point about the White Portuguese. It's a plot development taken from The Naked Gun. Do you remember The Naked Gun? Frank Nordberg says, I love you, to Frank. And Frank is trying to figure out the significance of I love you. Then he finds out that I love you is the name of a boat. And George Kennedy, late great George Kennedy, even says it. Frank, when Nordberg said I love you, he was talking about a ship. Which Frank replies, I see that.
Now.
I just love that. And I love that the exact same thing happens in Dawn of Justice. Master Bruce, when you said White Portuguese, you were talking about a boat. It's a small thing, but it tickled me. The White Portuguese, of course, is the name of a boat. Paul Stapleton says, seeing how quickly the US fires nukes at Superman, do you think the president on the other end of the phone is Donald Trump? What do we think about that?
Well, we know who it is, don't we?
We do know who it is. We don't know his name, but it's Patrick Wilson. It is Patrick Wilson. And someone else says, will the Justice League film focus on the fact that the American military detonates a nuclear weapon in the upper atmosphere of the planet? The nuclear fallout would probably have a tiny bit of impact on the planet. Yeah, I quite like that scene where they go, they're clear enough of the atmosphere now for us to fire a nuclear missile and have no problems. Just do it and shut up. Anyone have a problem with that? Is that fine?
Well, I mean, if we're accepting a man can indeed fly, then... If they're saying that's the rule, that's the rule. They know
that's the rule.
It's a weird thing about this film that it sort of says something about how busy it is that I keep forgetting that a nuclear bomb goes off at the end. Like, there's so much going on that I keep forgetting that there's a nuke goes off.
I'd forgotten that.
Yeah. I've seen it twice.
Same.
Yeah. And there's something wrong with that, isn't it?
Yeah. Batman's flying around in his batwing, and he looks up and he goes, oh. not another one. The same person, sorry, I'm so sorry I didn't write down your name, has pointed out that Batfleck would be dead since the radiation poisoning he'd get from being in proximity to Doomsday at the end would be pretty strong, because Doomsday, of course, is a direct hit from a nuclear missile. He'd have a lot of radiation. Mm-hmm. What do we think of... I quite like the beginning where we see the Battle of Metropolis from a different view. I really, really like that. But anyone love the fact that... Jack, the guy who works for Wayne Financial, is unable to figure out that he should evacuate the building.
That's crazy.
Boss.
I think we should go now. You think?
That he was. I mean, he was a real job surfer. He was waiting for personal authorization from his boss before he left. It's like, just go, mate. It's all right. But you should probably leave the building now.
That's only assuming that building's definitely going to be hit.
No, well, come on. This is carnage across an entire city. There are buildings coming down
everywhere.
So
why are you better off on the street where a building might fall on you?
I would have left it.
Yeah?
I would have left
it. If I was that high up, mm-hmm. I'd be gone.
Yeah.
Long gone.
Yeah. If I saw a building 10 blocks away exploding, and I'd be gone. But it personalises, doesn't it, by having Jack in there, having Jack die. Who is Jack? I want to know more about Jack. Who is this guy? But yeah, Batman at the end of the movie, there's an interesting point, I think, to be made by, I hope anyway, that they may have a problem going forward with the Justice League, because at the end of the movie you have Doomsday, Wonder Woman and Superman going at it hammer and tongs, innuendo fans, and like firing heat beams at each other and running around, these two indestructible beings fighting another indestructible being, and you basically have Batman watching going, what do we do? I mean, he leaps behind some rubble.
He fired the odd kryptonite grenade.
He fires the odd kryptonite grenade, but mainly he's running away from Doomsday in that sequence. And it's a problem that Marvel have as well with their slightly less powerful characters next to living gods. How do you rectify that going forward?
They provide like little distractions, though, don't they? Sometimes I think that's quite needed. That's a good point, though. Mm. He needs to up his game.
He needs to up his game. World's greatest detective. World's smartest man, Bruce Wayne, decides to
when he sees the havoc that Doomsday is wreaking, and he realizes the Kryptonian spear is the only thing that can kill Doomsday, decides to lure Doomsday to where the spear is rather than going to get the spear in his flying bat plane and then bring it back to Doomsday.
I mean, it's difficult, isn't it, in the heat of battle?
Yeah.
We've had this problem ourselves that, you know, you're making a decision just like that, and, you know, it's not necessarily the right one, but, you know, you've got to stick with your first thought, I think. If you're starting to lure, then don't stop luring, just continue to lure.
Continue to lure.
That's great advice, Johnny.
Thanks. Yeah.
John Izzard asks, and Nick, you know this, you were on set of Suicide Squad. Is Suicide Squad set pre or post Dodge? Which is his DOJ.
Oh, Dodge. It's set after. I don't know. I mean, that's a very, very good question.
I'm guessing it's set after.
I would be surprised.
Yeah. I mean, clearly there's reference to the Joker in this. There's obviously the clear implication that a Robin has died.
Yeah.
And the Joker was responsible. And there's Joker graffiti all over the building at the end, which I thought was Wayne Manor, but no, I'm not so sure. Perhaps someone can write it and correct us on that one. But
I do wonder if there'll be a connection between Lex Luthor and Amanda Waller, because obviously she's been doing her research and collecting metahumans, and she's collected about 10 of them, so she's more up on it than anyone. So I wonder if they've been sharing information or whatever.
Do we have any problems, I guess, with the slight retconning of the DC Extended Universe in terms of having Batman being active for 20 years? Does that diminish in any way the world's surprise upon seeing Superman for the first time, given that they've already had a costumed adventure running around? Obviously nowhere near as powerful as Superman, but he's not the first of his kind in Man of Steel. Is that a small thing, or am I just...
I don't think so. I mean, it's such a huge difference between a vigilante who's catching small-time crooks.
I loved your pronunciation of that word.
Vigilante.
It just classes it up. You know, dispensing vigilante justice.
And now another vigilante on the streets.
I will shoot you in the face.
Yeah, I think there's a huge gulf between a man who can fly and a man who... you know, has some nice guns.
Okay. All right, so second...
and a tyre. Big tyre.
Huge tyre. Yeah. Second meeting between Batman and Superman is the bit where I think it's the film's most quotable line, "Do you bleed? You will.
You will.
You will. You will bleed."
Which I like. Yeah. I think it needed more of that kind of comic, hard-boiled, kind of comic booky memorable dialogue. I thought that was a nice little... Although Superman doesn't hear the second half of it because he's flown off.
Of course he does. He's got super hearing.
Oh, yeah.
He can hear Lois Lane's heartbeat in Africa.
Good point.
But I don't know if he's listening for it.
He's a creepy stalker man, isn't he?
It would have been a little bit. Yeah, it would have been better if he'd come back. Sorry, what'd you say? Batman's like, no, that didn't say anything.
No, I definitely heard you said something. I was listening to Lois Lane's heartbeat in Africa, but I definitely heard you say something as well. So.
No, well, I
definitely just said,
"Do you read?"
Do you bleed? And then, yeah,
do you read? Do you read? Yeah. You will. You should read this. It's very, very good. Why am I threatening a living god in front of him? I haven't thought this through.
Do you like that bit?
Well, I like your idea now you've said it about the encounter in the Batcave. I would have liked to have seen that. But I thought this was fine. It's very brief.
Yeah.
Bounces the Batmobile off him.
Yeah.
And then they swap a couple of lines. And Superman comes off as a bit of a dick in that scene, doesn't he?
He does, doesn't he? It's interesting, the ideological conflict between Batman and Superman, given that they're essentially doing the same thing. I mean, Batman's obviously branding people. He's not doing, he's going the extra mile. You could argue, of course, Superman is driving terrorist warlords through walls at the speed of sound, but aren't they doing the same thing?
I wonder if maybe Lex should have framed Batman as well. You know, why not frame both of them to drive each other apart? Why not plant evidence on the... so both of them are kind of ostracised.
Mm. Give them more of a motive. That was one of the biggest problems of the film for me, was that I never, ever, ever felt the reason for them to ever go at each other. Ever. Have I said ever yet? I never felt it. And again, with the...
Did you feel it? Because I'm not sure if you felt it or not. Did you feel it?
No.
You didn't feel it? Okay.
Never.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting that the motivation ultimately comes down to, in order to make Superman have a go at Batman, he has to kidnap his mum.
Yeah.
And put her in mortal danger. But Batman is just he's off the freaking chain in this one, isn't he? I mean, there's a point in the fight, the big fight, where you realise that Batman is planning to kill this dude and has been planning to kill him for a long, long time. And obviously,
he's gone full Trump at that point. He doesn't see him as a human being. He doesn't see him as a person, as a man. He sees him as a god, as an alien. It must be dispatched, with terminated with extreme prejudice. But that feels that you're casting in that fight, the big showdown. You're casting Batman as the bad guy. What do we make of that?
But at the same time, you're not on Superman's side because he hasn't really come off well.
But you are, because he's trying to save his poor mum.
You feel sorry for him, but he's not been a likable character throughout the film. So
no, but he's the only one in that fight. I mean, he doesn't want to do the fight. He doesn't want to fight Batman at that point. He even comes down and says, you know, Bruce, we need to talk.
He does, but then he just decides to stop trying to have a conversation. And just he has one attempt to have a chat. And it's one of those things where if they just stopped and had a chat for 2 minutes, they would have both gone, oh, right, okay. Yeah. Oh, Lex told you that? Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And everything would have been fine. But obviously they need to have a fight. It's the only reason this film has been made. So,
yeah
I'm with you, Emma. I thought they didn't do a good enough job of... And also, it's just a weird fight because you kind of wait, they're building up to it, but you don't want to see it happen. You want them to make up.
I don't know. I did like kind of, you do want to see them make up, absolutely. But I mean, the fight obviously happens. And I don't know. I liked some of it. It's a really hard fight to choreograph, surely, because I mean, Batman's not an alien. How do you kind of put those two forces together? But I think for the most part, there are some nice little things.
I like the fight. I did like there the actual. Nice I did like the choreography and the gags and stuff. It could have been maybe a little bit longer.
It seemed odd that Superman fell for the same trick twice with the kryptonite dust. that goes in there. I'm just like, okay, the first time. But then when he does it again, he's incapacitated. It seems like, okay, you've got to put him on a level playing field. But I mean, surely he's smarter than that.
Well, I don't think it's more a case of he's tricked the second time around. I think he's trying to get the energy up to attack Batman, which gives Batman the time to shoot at him as he comes flying at him. You have to imagine at that point he doesn't have the strength to fly at super speed, which would obviously take the problem out of the equation. But I quite like the fight as well. You know, I think it could have had maybe a few more moments of invention. You have these two massive characters going at each other. You could have maybe done something a little bit more fun with it. I felt really sorry for Superman at the end, I'll be honest. He's literally been almost hogtied and then and thrown around like a rag doll by Batman, who's gone completely batshit, pun intended, at that point. And the point where he's standing over him, we're on Martha. The point where he's standing over him, it just made me feel like, what is this? Where is this going? What is this character who is not just standing over Superman ready to kill him, but is scratching his cheek?
Yeah.
Why are you doing this? What's happened to Bruce Wayne?
Sadistic, I guess,
playing with his food.
I had a slight issue with that. But then we come to Martha.
The M-word.
Now, the day... I don't know who came up with it, but if it was Chris Terrio, Zack Snyder, whoever, the day they realised that Batman and Superman's mother had the same first name, they must have just taken the rest of the day off. We're done here, guys.
Definitely went for noodles.
Yeah. It's like, because it's very difficult to get Batman. I'm not entirely sure it works. It's very difficult to get
Batman
back.
You're not entirely sure it works. I can say it doesn't work. It doesn't work. It's the worst thing in the film.
To be diplomatic.
No, it's the worst thing in the film. And it's frankly... it's sellotape, isn't it? They desperately need to figure out some way, and they've just gone, oh, that'll do.
It's
unconvincing.
Shame.
It's unrealistic as well, isn't it?
Who talks about their mum using their mum's name as well?
Yeah.
It's Martha.
I don't know, it could have been a really big moment. I mean, I guess they obviously view it as a huge moment, but again, how the build-up to the fight for me didn't have any, I didn't believe that. I totally didn't believe that either. So... I'd have happily had a longer fight, but I still needed those two bookends to have more punch. I just didn't believe it.
Eric Vespe, aka Quint from Ain't It Cool News, said it's the Step Brothers moment.
Yeah, nice.
And that's stuck in my head ever since, because it is. It's that scene from Step Brothers where they finally have something in common and they decide to become best friends. And
they didn't even need the same name. Like I don't know. There's so much to... We know that's such a huge thing for Bruce. It just could have been...
Yeah.
It could have been really, really, really upsetting.
I guess what they were going for is that kind of punches through his rage.
Yeah, of course.
And it reminds him about... You know, it gives him that flashback and it reminds him that, you know, it just pulls all that stuff away.
Yeah.
And he becomes Bruce Wayne again in that
moment. Yeah.
I guess that's what they were going for.
Yeah.
but it is silly.
It's a big turn. I mean, it's a 180. I mean, he goes from trying to kill the guy, slashing his cheek with the Kryptonian spear, to literally being his best friend within 10 seconds.
So if Lex's mum had been called Martha, would he then have sided with Lex? I mean,
yeah.
What are we to think about this?
It does feel real. But you're Nick's right as well.
Like, if Doomsday's mum had been called Martha, would he have sided with Doomsday?
Martha Doomsday.
We don't know, she wasn't. He should have checked. He should have just before he killed any of those people. Excuse me. Just need to work out.
Yeah. I think the robot voice aboard the Kryptonian ship was called Martha as well.
Yeah.
The one who goes, "It is forbidden to do this." And he goes, "No, I'm going to do it." Okay. <He's> like, what? It's forbidden. You just said it's forbidden.
Yeah, but Nick raises a good point. And I really now want to see a remake of Step Brothers, but with Superman and Batman. I mean, everything down to the teabagging of the drum kit.
Who would rub their balls on there? Superman rubbing his ball sack all over things in the Batcave.
Yeah. It's a fucking Metropolis wine mixer. I'd love to see that. That'd be amazing. But yeah, you're right. Like, if someone were, God forbid, ever to have their foot on my throat and were threatening my life and about to plunge a spear through my chest, and you know, I don't think, and my mother was in peril, I don't think I'd go, "They're going to kill Marty." I'd go, my mum's in danger. You'd do that, wouldn't you? Rather than Martha. Like, yeah, that's just weird.
Does he know that Martha refers to his mother? Does he say, "My mother, Martha"?
No, he just says,
"Why are you saying that name?"
Yeah. Martha. And you're going, people who call their parents by their first names are also the same people who kiss their parents on the lips. I mean, that's just weird.
You don't do that.
I don't. Well, not anymore. but it's proper weird. Proper weird. But yeah, it's a bit of a stretch.
They must have known. I mean, they must have had an inkling of the reaction that was going to get.
But what else are they going to do?
I know.
Anything else?
I mean, Lois. I mean, they maybe could have had Lois coming in, because Lois, God bless her.
Well, she's supposed to be the key, isn't she, to all this?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
5-time Oscar nominee Amy Adams, mm-hmm. who's reduced at the end of the movie to throwing a spear into a leg and then going,
Getting back in.
Maybe I shouldn't have done that. Maybe I should get around again. top Pulitzer
Prize. She should have come in and shown Batman Superman's Dropbox account to show him that this is a human guy. It's a Dropbox account.
But then his Dropbox account would have been literally just filled with pictures of how evil Batman is, and, like, you know, the "I hate Batman" folder and all that sort of stuff.
It could have been full of, you know, puppy pictures or, I don't know, something.
Surely Wonder Woman could have done it. She could have been the glue. I don't know. I'm just...
You know, who runs in and says, "Guys, you're being stupid.
It would have made a lot more sense.
This is exactly what Lex wants." And
I don't know, because if they're obviously all going to... It's all going to become the Justice League, then that would have made more sense. To me, I don't know.
It would have given Wonder Woman more to do.
Yeah, I mean, I really liked her in it. We haven't really talked about her.
No, we haven't. Well, that's
and it would have been nice if she had kind of been the same voice of reason, you know, that she has. She's been researching Lex, and so she comes in and basically shows them the evidence or whatever.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Doomsday can just come in earlier, can't he? Because they've already made up by the time Doomsday makes an appearance, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is the thing, like, you unite to fight a common enemy, and then... I mean, that happens in the X-Men films, doesn't it? Like, Professor X and Magneto will...
Oh, they're always teaming up.
Yeah.
Forever team up to fight whoever. And so, you know that can happen. It doesn't need this really contrived plot device that they're really, like, reaching for.
But I think ultimately, I feel the decision to bring in Doomsday, who... And correct me if I'm wrong, but certainly from my point of view in the comics, just didn't work. I mean, the death of Superman storyline, and people will write in probably.
I will write in because I love that comic book.
Is much derided, and the character of Doomsday is much derided. Yeah.
I read it a long time ago, but
It's not a good... The actual issue... It's not. Anyway. But...
I'm writing in now.
You are writing in. I can feel people furiously prepping their pens. Yeah, so the introduction of Doomsday in this movie was obviously to try and give them something to fight, because ultimately, once you have Batman and Superman, that's not going to be the end of the movie, those two guys fighting. They need to have something, they need to have a foe that is worthy of Superman, because Lex Luthor, as we all know, he can just flick him with his little finger, fly him through a wall, and he'll be done. Yeah. So you need something, but I just wonder about the choice of Doomsday. But anyway, let's never mind that. Wonder Woman. A lot of people are coming out of this movie. You know, we love her theme tune. We love Gal Gadot. She's great. Doesn't get enough to do, I think. But what do we make of Wonder Woman in this? What are you looking forward now to her film next year?
I really liked her stuff in the fight. I thought I didn't know what they're going to do with her because, bless her, whoever they cast was going to be. It's a hard task. I mean, Gal Gadot is so wee. She's so little, and to make anyone kind of seem like that kind of huge.
Is she wee? I think she's statuesque. She's tall.
No, she is.
But
I mean, to become that kind of. She's not someone like your Ronda Rousey or like your kind of Gina Carano who look like they could be like a, you know, they kind of fit that more. I'm being very generic here.
Okay.
I don't mean that. I think Gal Gadot's a great fit. I didn't kick up a stink when she was cast.
No.
But no, I didn't, no.
No, but I don't think many people did.
I really liked her fight. You know, she had her lasso in there as well. She got so many good moments, and to be fair, actually, she probably got kind of the most iconic standalone moments within that sort of four-way fight.
Mm.
And yeah, no, I am intrigued now. I liked the kind of, I know it's just a photo, but I do like the fact that it's going a bit period and it's got a good cast.
Mm.
So she didn't get to do too much, and there was nothing to really excite you, I think, to push her forward. But I'm just excited.
But we're excited about where she can go.
Yeah,
I think
was the point of that ramble.
Yeah.
Yes,
it's interesting that we've now seen her in combat and using her lasso and the bracelets and all that kind of stuff. It's yeah, I just wonder if, you know, that's the stuff which you want to see, and we've kind of seen it now. So I don't know what. I don't know too much about what the film is going to be, but...
But it's a prequel, it's a Captain America-style 100 mm-hmm. years in the past, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like flips around, yeah.
This whole thing seems very odd to me, that she disappeared for 100 years at the time that possibly the greatest evil the world has ever known. Like, you know, war was waged for 6 years in Europe and she did nothing. This woman did nothing. And was she supposed to be a hero? I mean, could she have stopped that? Could she at least have helped?
Maybe she wasn't enough. I don't know.
It's a point worth addressing.
I don't know.
I feel she says, "I walked 100 years ago. I walked away from mankind." And you're going, "Well, why did you walk away from mankind?" Because it's a lot of need. Yeah, a lot of bad shit happened in the interim. I mean, you could have stopped. She could have stopped the last season of The X Factor with Olly Murs as the host. She could have stopped that, and she didn't.
There's no need for that, Chris.
She stood by and she watched. Well, actually, nobody watched. Which is why Dermot O'Leary's back. Anyway.
how do we
get on to that? Anyway, I think that's pretty much it. We're looking forward then to Justice League. Because there's a lot of people out there. There was a lot of speculation that if this movie didn't do well, Zack Snyder might be taken off it. But it starts filming soon. It starts filming April 11th, as he said. So clearly they're going to go ahead. They're moving ahead with Zack Snyder and his vision. His quite dark vision for the Justice League.
Yeah.
I'm intrigued. I mean, excited might be a step too far. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I haven't warmed to the team. I would rather see a solo Batman movie at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. I'm more excited about Suicide Squad.
Yeah, that does seem interesting. Mm. See,
I just think David Ayer's going to do something different. It's going to feel a bit fresher.
Okay, I think we're pretty much done here. I mean, there's tons of stuff I didn't really get a chance to talk about, but we've talked for long enough and you've listened for long enough, you're probably sick of it already, but you know, little things like the use of iconography of Batman in this movie I thought was interesting. Did you think, I was really looking forward to seeing what Zack Snyder would do with this character visually, but it seemed to me that in some ways to be not a retread but harking back to moments. I mean, we have a question here from someone, I'm sorry I've lost a question, but someone pointed out the same thing I was going to point out, which is that the truck scene chase
has a Dark Knight.
Yeah, very similar to The Dark Knight. It has a bad guy in the back with a rocket launcher trying to shoot at the Batmobile. I mean, that it's that.
Did you spot Nicholson Terminal at the docks?
I did not spot that as well. I
think that's a Jack Nicholson reference.
And I think
it is.
And I like the fact that in Batman, when Bruce Wayne clones the evil Russian guy's phone, it says device cloning successful, which to me feels like a nod to the 60s TV show, which had such on-the-nose signs. That's pretty good. Someone's asked our favourite cameo, Flash, Aquaman, Cyborg, Jimmy Olsen, Jonathan Kent, or Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Oh, that did make me laugh.
Best cameo.
best cameo, yeah.
KG Beast.
David Ryder asks, can't we just scrap this League of Losers and have Wonder Woman head up an all-female team?
Huh.
A lot of females in her own film, but...
I'm going to race through some questions really quickly here. So Dave Moran says, why didn't Superman stop the obviously very bad guys in the truck firing rockets in public first and then give Batman his mercy warning?
Bad screenwriting.
Bad screenwriting. In fact, twice in the movie he gives Callum Mulvey's bad guy. He lets him get away when he could have easily stopped him right at the beginning as well. Dave Moran also makes a point. At the end, we see the ghoul Superman is going to return after having a giant spear horn rammed completely through his chest. After the second view, and I saw it come out through his back. That's lovely. But Sod can't return from a broken neck. Good point.
Next question.
Good point.
But he kind of did come back.
What do we think about the death of Superman? Just very quickly.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is that they treat it, you know, they had the screenings. Somebody came out and basically said, oh, there are huge spoilers. There are huge twists and turns. Please don't ruin the end of the movie. But it's kind of hard to feel that it could be ruined because Henry Cavill's been Instagramming photos of him at the gym prepping for Justice League, so we know he's coming back. We knew that like months before the film came out.
There is so rarely any threat, is there, in any of these films?
No, I know, but...
But it did make me cry, I am going to be honest.
Whoa. Really?
Whoa. Okay, that's a bombshell.
Yeah. And then, I cried twice doing it.
What?
I'm a renowned crier. I mean,
what was the other point?
That's a weepy film.
The Casey, big old Kev.
The what?
Kevin Costner?
Yeah.
Building
a tower of rocks.
This podcast is it's not going to run for an extra hour while we just interrogate Emma here. What?
Oh no, they did. They made me tear up. And even though I knew that, see, there's no way Superman's dead because he's friggin' Superman. It did make a few tears rolled down these cheeks.
I very much liked the shots of the guns firing in slow mo. I thought they were really good.
But why? Why would they put him in a coffin?
At a funeral.
Oh yeah.
Also,
yeah.
Like, if they think, I know they're kind of all team Supes at that point, but if he's maybe 1% of a threat, would they not incinerate him so that he could never come back?
How are you going to incinerate him?
This is true, actually.
Yeah, what are you going to do? Throw him into the sun. I mean, that's the only way you could possibly do it. And then we'll probably bring him back to life quicker.
Yeah, isn't that where he gets his power from?
Yeah, so he'd be daft. It'd be daft throwing him into the sun. Disregard my advice, people.
Cancel the operation to throw Superman into the sun.
Goth Tropolis. That's very interesting that you said that.
It's not because I'm a girl, FYI.
Yeah.
I just didn't think you needed it to end on such a dour note. I just thought, you know, it's been dour and melancholy all the way through. Why not end with the team together and happy and, you know, hey, we've got a new team and get excited because you're going to see them in action.
I think they had to kind of finish that sort of sacrificial arc, that element. We were just saying the Christ-like elements earlier,
but
that
also,
did really run through it for me.
Also, the producers and Zack Snyder said that they needed Superman to be out of the picture in order to provoke Batman into forming Justice League. And if the dark side turns up and Superman's already there and he's less of a threat, I get that. I understand that. I think it reaches for an emotional pitch that it doesn't necessarily have or earn. Mm-hmm. It's a fine moment. And obviously, you know, once Doomsday turns up, you're kind of thinking, oh, well, this isn't going to end well.
Once Superman comes back, is he going to be the Superman that we know?
That's interesting, isn't it?
That is a question.
That is interesting. Is he going to turn? Is he going to turn bad?
I just wonder if people would have received the film more warmly had it been just finished a lot earlier. And just finished off the Batman-Superman fight and just ended with the forming of the Justice League. And they catch Lex and put him away.
Yeah, possibly.
Just, there's too much.
But obviously, you know, it's a huge, huge hit, this film. And, you know, I think it's probably going to easily clear a billion. So
on a grander scale, one thing I did want to say, and I heard some people on a train yesterday kind of saying it behind me, they were very, very confused by it. And I think that is my main thing with the film. Whilst I was watching it, I was just thinking, what are... people that have no idea about this going to think, because there are so many Easter eggs, there are so much, and as I said, it might become this, all the puzzle pieces may come together as we get further down the line, but it kind of demands that, I read a really great tweet sort of saying, like, it demands that we recognise death in the family, the arc, and a future flash, but figures that we don't know that Bruce Wayne was orphaned by a violent crime. So...
on the one hand, it's spoon-feeding you, on the other hand, it's assuming you'd have a lot of background info.
But, it seems to be a lot of confusion. I don't know.
I mean, I imagine Zack Snyder just wanted to shoot that scene. He wanted to shoot the death of the parents.
I loved it.
And it's very nicely shot.
Very nice.
The pearls and the...
This is the thing. I think, like, this we've been very down on this film throughout this entire podcast, but I mean, I would tell people to go and see it.
Yeah, same.
I would say go and see this film. You know, it has some wonderful moments and it doesn't really hang together very well, but, you know, it's a spectacle that I think is worth 2.5 hours of your time.
And I don't think we've said enough about how good Affleck and Jeremy Irons are together as Batman and Alfred. And, you know, I said I'd love to see a solo film and I would, because I think those scenes just work, they click.
Those two, I mean...
I love the design of the Batcave as well.
So
everything is suspended from wires, so everything is coming off the ceiling, like bats hanging down.
The entrance to it is amazing. Yeah.
Love the lake house kind of vibe with the steam coming off the lake.
Oh, yeah, his place is amazing.
Isn't it?
All right, I'm going to say this. Ben Affleck is the greatest screen Batman.
Whoa.
And I think I might... I think I believe that.
Okay.
I think I believe it. It's hard to tell after so long. But, yeah, he's very, very good. He's very, very good, and I think, you know... A solo movie would be great, and to see him as a focal point of the Justice League would be very, very interesting.
Yeah. I think he's really good as Bruce Wayne. The character up a little bit as well. I think that when he's actually working in the team and that they can give him a bit of funny stuff to do as well. I'm assuming Justice League would be a little bit lighter in terms of there are some heroes who are getting along rather than trying to put things for each other's chests.
Yeah, it's more people to play off as well, isn't there? So, you know.
So,
but to see Affleck sort of direct his own standalone would definitely be a thing.
Oh. Right. What a dream.
Right?
Yeah.
Right there.
Yeah.
That would be good.
I enjoyed that there was a character called Senator Purrington, which I think would be an excellent name for a cat.
Purrington.
Senator
Sounds
Purrington.
Sounds like a Austin Powers cat. Something.
Chris, any more questions?
That's my final thought.
There are loads of questions, Johnny. But there's so many questions. When Batman started
Chris is currently holding 72 pieces.
I honestly am.
I wish you guys could see this wedge.
This is an insane amount of questions. A lot of stuff has been covered. When Batman started using traps against Superman, did anyone else hope it would go into a Home Alone-style sequence where he threw paint cans filled with kryptonite at him? That would have been interesting. As Lex Luthor now knows the real identities of all the Justice League, what's going to stop him from telling everybody else about them when they form the Justice League?
Exactly.
That's a good point.
Because he's crazy and he's behind bars.
Who's going to listen to a crazy guy?
Do they really shave your head when you go to prison?
Yeah,
is that a thing that
it's
happens?
Prerequisite.
I thought it was just when you went to the army.
It happens in Shawshank, but that's because it's an old prison set in the... Well, he goes there in 49, right?
Yeah.
And I think it's to stop lice, isn't it? It's a hygiene thing.
I think it was to... because it was an iconic moment, apparently.
Superman can hear Lois Lane every time she trips over her Pulitzer Prize and skins her knee, says Laura Bradburn of Glasgow. Why can't he hear his own mum be getting kidnapped and put into a fan? It is interesting, you know, does...
It's the inherent problem with Superman, isn't it? That, I mean, he's a very, very silly character.
Well, to be fair, I think the idea is that he's distracted and depressed, and so he goes off and he's titting about.
He's titting about
while that's happening.
But with everything, you can say, well, why doesn't Superman do this? Because he has this power, or he can go this fast, or, you know.
But I guess the idea is his mojo, you know. He's just his mojo, baby.
But I'm just saying,
that's why he's missing obvious things.
He should be able to save the world several times over, and, you know, then it's breakfast time.
Yeah,
and
realistically speaking, because Gotham and Metropolis are so close to each other, he should be able to eradicate crime in Metropolis for the most part, and then just nip over to Gotham and do that there as well, which really pissed Batman off. It's like, that's my job!
Yeah, but so this is the thing. There's nitpicking here, but there has to be a suspension of disbelief that, you know, a man can fly, and, you know, sometimes... Yeah. Not everything will make entire perfect logical sense because it's not the real world.
Absolutely. I guess not, which explains why they write witch on Martha Kent's head and then take it off.
Yeah, because that's how pens work in that world. I mean, we're just
it's disappearing ink.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah.
Good spot.
Didn't notice that.
Yeah. Good spot.
Very good.
I think that's pretty much everything that we've covered. If we didn't read your question out, then apologies, but there were so many questions, and as you can tell, we've talked for an awful, awful long time about this movie already.
It's lunchtime.
There's still stuff we haven't covered.
I've still got things to say.
But when they
get Day of the Dead wrong.
Yeah.
The date.
Do they?
Yep. It's November 2nd, not November 1st.
Really?
Yep.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
Anyway.
Yeah. But as with Rogue Nation, the spoiler podcast for that, when you're talking for as long as the movie lasts, then maybe it's time to move on.
Time are we fighting?
We're close. If you put this podcast on around the time that Batman Superman start fighting, I think around the time that if you put this podcast on and synced it up with the movie, then I think we'd be up at the Batman Superman fight by now. So I think it's time to call it a day. Thank you so much, of course, to Nick.
Thank you,
Emma.
Thank you.
And Johnny,
thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to our mad ramblings. Hope you enjoyed it. Our next spoiler special is probably going to be Daredevil Season 2. I'm hoping. I'm working on something, so fingers crossed. And if not, hopefully it'll be Captain America Civil War at the end of April. So do keep an eye out for that, as you know. And if you don't know, the regular podcast is out every Friday, in which we talk about the week's movie news, week's movie reviews, and we have star guests on as well. So if you don't already subscribe or listen to that, then we would love it if you would do so, and that'd be fantastic. In the meantime, I hope you've enjoyed our Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice spoiler special. I've been Chris Hewitt. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.